tonight for the combined dispatch center. The two chiefs here tonight can answer any questions you have on why that is the preferred location. It has to do with operational costs, especially in operational efficiencies. Just to refer again to our capital planning process that we've had in place for a few years. In 1997, we passed the capital improvement bylaw and created the committee. They've been doing great work since then in trying to make sure we give adequate lead time, we assign priorities, we put projects in right order, and we try to make sure that we're addressing them in a productive and far-sighted way. We did do the comprehensive facility report to try to give us all the information that we would need to lay out a blueprint. And just to mention, we did adopt the Community Preservation Act, which will be helpful because it does allow funds to be used for some of the historic town-owned buildings. But the police station, we feel at this point, is more critical. We need to start getting the information to be able to decide what we're going to do about the police station. I said, keep adding to this, when I've talked about capital projects, the municipal facilities timeline, going through that back from 1981, we're doing about two projects a decade trying to add to them. We are trying to make sure that when we do it, we allow debt from one set of projects to pay off, so we're putting in the next. We're not having all of them be dealt with at once. The 97 issue for the library will be paying off about that time. There would be room at that time to begin another project, so we're trying to look in that type of time range. What else we will bring to you, it's in the comprehensive facility study, and we've said this before, the other major projects, what we're going to do with Town Hall, the Flynn Building, and the Loring Parsonage. We approved last night the additional funding for the elevators to get us over there. But that doesn't end all the problems in the Flynn Building. It doesn't deal with the employees that are still in the Town Hall. It doesn't bring us all together, and it doesn't make a decision what we do with our historic and beautiful Town Hall, which I feel strongly should be our center of government. We should be looking at that at some point to get us out of the Flynn Building and some plan to put us over there. The other problems that we still have out there at the Fairbank Building, our Council on Aging and Recreation departments are bursting at the seams. They need the space where the school administration is now. We need a place for them. Again, the report laid out a long-term proposal, put us over, do something at the town hall, put us over there, renovate the Flynn, put the school administration over there, and that sort of does this chain. So what we're trying to do is all this long range. This is going to take several years to do, but this is what we have on our horizon. And again, on financial planning, we have tried to space these projects, and we want the information early enough now so that we're ready a few years from now. We've looked at alternatives. We've vetted them with the community. We've had a chance to get the information and test it ourselves. What you should be seeing now, you can't really read. It's the consultant's report on the deficiencies in the Sudbury Police Station. Over the next two pages, I've reprinted them. They're the same findings. I just put them in my own type, better reading there. And the chief will go through most of those in terms of what the problems are. I'm just showing this is what the consultant said for us as well. We have the list for the police station was probably longer than any other building in terms of the inadequacies. Last thing I'd like to convey, this problem with the police station won't go away. So far, we've been lucky and dodged a lot of problems. The chief will discuss some that have been endured down there. Better planning will result in better choices and outcomes for the town, and I recommend that we get this information to help us do that. This work should give us specific parameters for the choices ahead. One thing I'll say, we're going to mention again, the ADA problems, the lack of accessibility for it, and at the state level, they tend to give you a little more leeway when they see you're working to resolve a problem. If they see that you continue to ignore it, you run more risks of trouble from there and something being brought against you. So we do want to make sure this building does have those problems. Mr. Moderator, I'd ask at this time if you would recognize Chief Fagin to talk about the deficiencies in the building.
I will. Chief. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As the town manager has stated, the deficiencies of the police station are numerous. I'll attempt, in the limited time available, to give you what I believe are the more serious deficiencies and then give you some examples of the problems they cause. In the physical support of the building, the heating and the cooling systems are insufficient to support the needs of the building. It requires the use of space heaters and freestanding air conditioners to supplement the system. Some examples of the problems that it causes. Water must be kept running to prevent pipes from freezing at certain times during winter months. Some officers and office and dispatch personnel must wear winter coats to keep warm. and the cell block is virtually unheated. In warm weather, sensitive equipment, including E911 and the radio system, are unable to be properly cooled due to lack of air conditioning or ventilation. Ventilation is extremely poor throughout the station, but especially in the area where this equipment is located. The electrical requirements of the building have grown over the years with the introduction of more and more equipment required to perform our jobs. Thus, the electrical infrastructure of the building cannot handle the demands made on it. Some examples of troubles caused by the electrical system are circuit breakers regularly fail when space heaters or air conditioners are in use, causing the temporary shutdown of certain work areas, including the dispatch area. During the past 2 years, we have experienced two electrical outlet fires, one of which was located in the evidence room, where a limited number of people have access. The cause of the problem was not immediately found, and it resulted in the loss of electricity to the rear of the police station for 2 days. There are five other electrical outlets in the hallways and the cell block area that do not work. In the past two years, six computers have been damaged due to irregular current flow, despite the use of UPSs. A violent prisoner damaged a cell light, which caused interruption of power to the front of the station and caused a loss of phone service for several hours. Some equipment needs to be turned off in some areas in order to run equipment in other areas, because the system has an inability to handle the demand. On the building design, the main water, natural gas, and electric supply all come into the same room that houses the E911 radio and telephone systems. Building security is inadequate given the inherent nature of police duties. The design is such that it affects officer safety as well as the safety of the public who might be present on business. Some examples of the security in the building are: exterior doors have an antiquated push-button entry method that often malfunctions, leaving doors unsecured. All exit doors from the station may be opened from the inside by any person, and this has resulted in three prisoners temporarily getting out of the building since 1990. Prisoners must be escorted from the booking room via a common hallway and down a flight of stairs to the holding cells. Officers have fallen down the stairs in the past struggling with violent prisoners. As the building only has one common hallway, any member of the public, a victim, or a witness within the station could come into contact with the prisoner being brought to or from the holding cells. All exits from the building can be accessed from this hallway by any prisoner who got loose, and he would also have access to any of the offices or the locker room facility. A small conference room is the only area that we have available to interview both people under arrest, suspects, or members of the public that are there to file a complaint. At current staffing levels, office and space storage are at a minimum. The building will not be able to meet the requirements of the department with anticipated growth. Some examples of the storage problems are: an office space, a small storage closet serves as the office for the DARE officer. He shares this office with office supplies and files. Limited space has made it necessary to store department firearms and ammunition, as well as other department equipment, in the evidence room, along with case files, making these resources unavailable due to their sensitive area that they're located. Three investigators work out of a 14 by 15 foot office, which also stores their equipment and department fingerprint and photograph records, making them unavailable to the department when they are out of the office. Locker rooms and lockers are small and inadequate to store the officer's everyday equipment. Some officers take some of the equipment home in the trunks of their car and carry it back and forth to work. The locker room contains one shower and no seating for dressing. About 7 years ago, we took half of the front lobby area and walled it off to make office space for the shift supervisors. And lastly is the parking during the day and the shift changes at capacity. There are 17 spaces for for 33 employees and public visitors. About 5 years ago, we looked at the parking situation, and we had to take part of the front lawn to make three more spaces. The lot's not big enough for more parking or for an expansion. I have covered a few of the areas that I feel are the most serious, and for the safety and health of the employees and the safety of the public doing business at the police station, I urge you to approve this article.
Thank you on your maiden speech, Chief. Kirsten Rupenian for the Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As you've heard, the police department has outgrown its facilities, and hopefully none of us has experienced firsthand the cold cell block. I know I certainly haven't. I have seen it, and I hope never to go in there, not even to get somebody out. But largely due to present-day requirements for police work and due to growth in the town's population, it is important that we look at this in a long-range perspective. Doing so gives us the option and the necessary information to be able to consider everything that we could possibly do as far as options available for a police station. In order to prepare for the necessary room and facilities required to carry out public safety functions, as the town manager and chief have already stated, it's appropriate and recommended to plan in advance. The Board of Selectmen unanimously urges your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob Jacobson for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends town meeting approve this article.
Gary Spidell for the Capital Improvements Committee.
The Capital Improvement Planning Committee strongly recommends support of this article.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 14? Mr. Reap?
Frank Reap, New Bridge Road. I just have a couple of questions. The first question would probably be best answered by the chief. The presentation suggests that the existing building could not be renovated to suit their needs and that a new site is desired. Actually, two-part question. What do we do with the existing building and land? Is there any... is this a part of the capital planning, how we dispose or reuse that site? And part B of the question is, what are possible sites that the police department would consider as being viable? For instance, do we expect it to be located elsewhere on Route 20 in a similarly central location?
Thank you. Maureen Valente, please, for an answer.
Part one, we haven't completely eliminated the existing site, but we have pretty much eliminated the possibility of a renovation. The way it was added onto when it did the retrofit, if we showed you a schematic of how it all lays out and everything, I've been told pretty much, and we'll get a confirmation, we hope, from the consultant, it's not a matter of just a simple renovation or adding on to deal with it. It's the underlying design is so poor that we can't do that. Could it fit on the existing site, or could we also look to expand in that immediate area? That's one thing that we'll consider and take a look at. Alternative sites, there aren't a lot at this point. The town owns land in several places. The Bushy House, for instance, property along there, and the town's considering acquiring other property. That's going to be one of the toughest plant. Land in this town is so expensive, and there's so many competing uses for it. In terms of if we could find another site or we relocated it somewhere, for instance, if we would examine once again, is could we put it on the same site with the fire station and create some sort of combined? Those are things we don't know. If we could put it somewhere else, the board would put together some sort of planning process for what we should do with the site, but I know that's factored in our thinking that if it was sold for some commercial purpose, that money could help with the construction. But that's as far as our thinking has gotten until we get the results back from this kind of study.
The other question is, given that the process of designing and delivering buildings in Sudbury is somewhat opaque. Will the process of designing this building be subject to review by the Design Review Board?
I would think so. I think this is the first building that I'm aware of in a number of years on the municipal side that we will be starting with a new design. I know at the DPW, when we came and asked for money, the design had long been done. We asked for construction money to construct the design. Other projects and things that we've had have been building on the library, et cetera, an existing building. So this would be the first one that would fall in there, and I'm sure, and it would absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 14? I see none. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes unanimously. Before we get to Article 15, I'd like to announce that Susan Pope, our state representative, had planned to be here tonight, but apparently the business of the House will keep her from us, so she sends her greetings. Asked petitioner Frank Lyons to make the presentation on Article 15.
My name is Frank Lyons, and I live at 157 Wayside End Road, and I serve as president of the Hopbrook Protection Association, on whose behalf Article 15 and 16 were submitted. Mr. Moderator, I move to indefinitely postpone Article 15.
Is there a second to that motion? There is. Mr. Lyons?
I had originally put together 7 or 8 PowerPoint slides to explain this, but then I found out last Wednesday night that that's not appropriate, that the only subject to which I should speak is the reasons for postponing this article. And so I'll do that. As you can see, it's an article that is an attempt to start cleaning up a pond in Sudbury, which has been severely damaged through the years. Last summer it had no open space, and it's a 40-acre pond. It's hypereutrophic, which simply stated means that it's going to turn into a swamp if nobody does anything to remediate the problem. So why are we postponing it? There are really two reasons for postponing this article. Last Monday, I found out that the only way that this article could be funded would be for us to get up and start playing with the budget. In other words, taking money from somewhere else in the budget and putting it to pay for this article. I thought that was inappropriate. I respect the work of the FinCom and the town manager and did not want to be changing the budget on a fly, not understanding what I was doing. The other option was to have a Proposition 2.5 override, and I think that's kind of a non-starter. I don't need to say a whole lot about that. So we are withdrawing, or we're postponing this article indefinitely. We have spoken with the Conservation Commission and the Selectmen about it, and that gets to the second reason for postponing the article. Both groups have some, I think they agree in principle that something like dredging should be done to Cardinal Pond, but they both have a request to look into the scope of what this article might present, look into that a little bit more. And so that is what we plan to do. We look forward to working with the Selectmen and the Conservation Commission to resolve any questions, any additional questions or issues that they have so that we can get on with a plan that they can enthusiastically support to move this project forward. The last thing I'd like to say is I'd like to thank, there have been a lot of people who've worked hard on the passage of this article, and I'd like to thank them for that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lyons. Does anyone wish to speak about why this article should or should not be postponed? Mr. Mikesell.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm Mike Mikesell from 34 Barton Drive. I and others in Sudbury and neighboring towns are working on an attempt to restore the former extensive herring and shad runs, migration runs, spawning migration runs into the Sudbury River and its tributaries. We support the motion to IP for the following reasons. This year, we will be transferring 5,000 to 7,000 herring into the Sudbury River and into Herd Pond in Wayland. Although Sudbury's Hop Brook is a major tributary of the Sudbury River, unless the ecology of the Hop Brook ponds is restored, the herring will not be able to use Hop Brook. The herring restoration project supports indefinite postponement in the hope that Sudbury officials will use the coming months to explore options and to plan for the restoration of these brooks and ponds.
Thank you, Mr. Mixel. Does the Finance Committee wish to be heard?
The Finance Committee supports indefinitely postponing this article.
Thank you. Do the Selectmen wish to be heard?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen definitely support indefinite postponement. I just want to add that we've been working very hard with the Hop Brook Association and looking at the issues and challenging issues on Hop Brook. Hop Brook has been carrying a lot of water over the years, no pun intended. And as we talk to Mr. Lyons and Hop Brook Association, it's now time for the town to step up and start making sure that the water quality in Sudbury is protected, and the valuable resource, historic resource, the Wayside Inn, is also protected. So this is the first step of us moving forward to make sure Sudbury waters are protected. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Seeing no one else at the mic, all those in favor of indefinitely postponing Article 15, raise your cards. All those opposed? It passes overwhelmingly. We're on Article 16. Mr. Lyons?
Article 16 was...
Mr. Lyons? I'm sorry. Can you make a motion?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'd like to make a motion. Mr. Moderator, I'd like to make a motion to indefinitely postpone Article 16.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. Mr. Lyons?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Article 16 was an attempt to get some funding to work with some to get some funding for legal expenses to deal with an NPDES permit. I'll be very brief. I just want to explain what an NPDES permit is, and then that'll be it. These sewage treatment plants, let me back up a little bit. We've got 90 acres of ponds in Sudbury, which have been affected by what I will call nutrient pollution from the Marlboro Easterly Wastewater Treatment Plant. It just means that their effluent has a lot of nutrients in it. This is normally regulated by operating permits from the state government and the federal government. The operating permit for the Marlboro Easterly Wastewater Treatment Plant is more than 10.5 years overdue. There's a draft permit out which has some problems with it, and that needs to be addressed, and that's what this article was attempting to do. We are withdrawing this article, indefinitely postponing this article because the selectmen have decided to take on the appeal of this permit.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Finance Committee wish to be heard?
Yes, the Finance Committee supports indefinitely postponing this article.
Selectman?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Selectmen also support indefinite postponement, and the reason being is that, as Mr. Lyons stated, for the town to retain our right to comment on the permit and make sure the permit is protective of Sudbury's waters, we will be in the process of appealing the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 16? Yes, Mr. Lyons.
One very important thing that I forgot to do, and I'd just like to thank the selectmen for taking this on.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Don Charles, 92 Blueberry Hill Lane. I just have a question for the Board of Selectmen of just what kind of follow-up you expect to be undertaking in the next few months to ensure that Hop Brook becomes a bit cleaner.
I'm going to allow the question for a 15-second answer because that's really way off the topic of indefinite postponement. Does the selectman care to give a 15-second answer?
I think the first step is file the appeal, and as we go forward, we'll just have to take it one step at a time. But if we don't file the appeal, we don't have the ability to comment on the permit. So that's the first step.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on why this article should or should not be indefinitely postponed? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We move on to Article 17, transfer of land off Wilshire Street to Selectmen for sale. Before the motion, a couple of statements. You'll notice in the warrant that the next six articles all require a two-thirds vote. In each case, we have 17 and 18. 17 is to access the land to the selectmen, and 18 would be to transfer the land in question to the housing authority. The same would be true for 19 and 20, and then again for 20 and 21. Because of that, I will permit discussion on 17 and 18 at this time together, but the vote on each will be separate. So we'll start with a motion from John Darcy of the Sudbury Housing Authority.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move in the words of the article, provided that such transfer takes place within 2 years of the date of this vote, subject to a determination by the board having custody of the land that it is no longer necessary for municipal purposes.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Darcy for presentation.
Do you want me to start?
Excuse me?
Should I put 18 up as well or no?
No, because, well, you can put it up, but you can't move it yet. Why don't you put it up so everyone can see it, and then we can talk about both of them. Again, 17 is to access the land to the selectmen, and 18 is for the selectmen to deed it to the housing authority. You may speak about either article.
Okay.
Mr. Darcy.
Well, for your convenience, I'll speak to both of them at the same time, if you don't mind.
No, that's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. My name is John Darcy. I am a member of the Sudbury Housing Authority, as the moderator told you. I live at 82 Cranberry Circle. I've lived in town for 12 years. I appreciate this opportunity to speak on behalf of Town Meeting Articles 17 and 18. The slide behind me is not a mistake. For those of you who noticed, it says April 2003. It has last year's date to remind the hall that tonight's vote is a continuation of a process started prior to last year's town meeting. Last year, town meeting voted overwhelmingly to support the SHA's plan to construct up to 16 units of affordable family housing on scattered sites around Sudbury. The Housing Authority requested $320,000 in Community Preservation Act funds for this project. The Community Preservation Committee unanimously supported this proposal. The selectmen unanimously supported this proposal. And town meeting overwhelmingly supported this proposal. The houses built would be family rental units. The Sudbury Housing Authority only oversees rental units. And the need in town is greatest for affordable family units. Several examples of what we build and how we maintain it already exist in town. As you can see, the proposed homes have an appearance similar to many single-family homes in town. This design is intentional and is beneficial for both our residents and our neighbors. By all measures, including property value increases, the Sudbury Housing Authority and our tenants are very good citizens and very good neighbors. We concluded last year's presentation acknowledging that the selection of specific sites was the next step, which brings us to this year. Now the date's correct, I hope. Well, it should bring us to this year. Anyway, as promised, a site selection committee was convened by the Board of Selectmen That broad-based panel, the Blue Ribbon Housing Site Selection Committee, spent the intervening year following the selectman's charge to use an open and deliberative process to find suitable sites on which to construct these houses. We appreciate their efforts. The Site Selection Committee reported their findings to the selectman, who subsequently provided the SHA with the sites identified in tonight's articles. I'm sure we'll catch up, right? Construction of these houses will not occur tomorrow. We already have approval of CPA funding from last year. Tonight, we seek approval for three sites. This is the first. We already own a fourth. We can then go forward with the funding and permitting process. With some good fortune, we could be in the ground at this time next year. Your vote tonight is step two. Last year was step one. Your vote tonight is step two of what is a four-step process. The four-step process includes allocation of funds from CPA, approval of the sites by town meeting. Then we have to get our funding sources, and we will. And tonight's vote will go a long way towards making that happen. And then we have to get permitted by the town. Excuse me. Okay. Why vote for this? Why should you vote for this? You should vote for this because your vote will send a positive message to the funding sources and serve as a clear message of the direction in which Sudbury would like to move. But mostly you should vote for this because it's the right thing to do. It's what the town feels is right. It's a continuation of last year's vote when 80% of town meeting said we should move ahead in this direction. Obviously, the sites that are being brought before you tonight are not sufficient to accomplish the full scale of our original proposal. We will only be building what the approved sites can reasonably accommodate. At maximum, this would be 4 to 5 houses. If for some reason any of these sites are not buildable, perk tests, ledge, wetlands issues, our numbers would be reduced accordingly. As voted last year, the approved CPA funds will only be allocated on a $20,000 per unit basis. Articles 17 and 18 refer to a Wilshire Street site. This parcel is located at the end of Wilshire Street and near the field behind the State Police Lab on Horse Pond Road. There's a diagram of this site in the warrant. As I mentioned, your vote tonight will serve to give the selectmen the directive to transfer the land to the SHA for this purpose. We then need to test the site for perkability. We need to discern if there are any ledge or if there are any impediments to construction. We need to take these steps after we have a right to the land, not before. We can't do all of these tests before we have access, before we own the land. We also need to meet any wetlands restrictions that would apply. Are the articles before you controversial? You bet. But the reality is that we are not here tonight to rehash last year's debate. We already voted to build these houses as one step to increase the number of affordable units in town. Is the construction of one house where only trees presently stand, undesirable to the neighbors? Of course it is. Almost all of us would prefer to keep the lot next to us or down the street undeveloped. But that's not always realistic. In this instance, doing so would go against one of our town's needs. In the end, we are talking about a single house here. This is right for Sudbury, and it's worthy of your vote. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for your vote. Thank you, Mr. Thompson, for your help.
Sorry about that.
And thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Yes, sir. Bob Jacobson, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Larry O'Brien, Selectman.
Mr. Moderator. Good evening. My name is Larry O'Brien. I'm a member of the Board of Selectmen, and I would first like to report to you that the Board of Selectmen unanimously supports all of the articles that we are discussing in front of you this evening concerning the transfer of land for the construction of affordable housing. At the end of last year's meeting, as Mr. Darcy had indicated to you, the selectmen set out and created the Blue Ribbon Site Selection Committee. That was comprised of seven citizens, four at large, one from the Conservation Commission, one from the Planning Board, one from the Housing Authority. They spent the better part of July, August, and September reviewing hundreds of town sites, some of them as small as a postage stamp, some of them underwater, some of them with recognizable town buildings on them like the fire station, town hall, the Flynn building, etc. They came up with a list of sites that were potentially buildable and usable to address the application of the funds that were approved last year. And then they held two public forums as well as meetings with the various boards and committees that would be involved in this and the selectmen. During this process, as well as some newspaper articles that were published on the plans to build this affordable housing, I was asked, as I was out and about in town, various questions, some of them quite interesting, and I would like to share some of those with you. One of them that I heard a few times is, why is the town going into the rental business? Why does the town have a sudden interest in housing? Why all of a sudden are we transferring land for housing? And why does the town suddenly think that scattered site housing is the way to go as compared to considering the construction of another large complex on Route 20? I would presume that Longfellow Glen was what was being referenced. Well, some of these questions I felt deserved a little research, and I undertook that effort, and I went back to the 1970s. The reason I did that was at this body, town meeting in 1971, voted to establish the Sudbury Housing Authority for the purpose of providing housing for elderly persons of low income. Town meeting in 1973 voted to transfer 8 acres of land to the Sudbury Housing Authority for the construction of Musketaquid Village. That's located next to the main fire station on Hudson Road at the intersection of 27 and Hudson Road. And that was for affordable housing for the elderly. Town meeting in 1973 also voted to establish a nonprofit housing corporation to examine possibilities of construction of possibilities for the construction or conversion of housing for scattered sites throughout town. Town meeting 1974 voted to extend and expand the mandate of the Sudbury Housing Authority to include rental sites for families of moderate to low income. 1975, the Housing Authority used a state grant to purchase 5 single-family homes, 3 located in North Sudbury, 2 located in the Pine Lakes area. In 1983, the Housing Authority purchased 3 additional houses with state grants as well. In 1988, town meeting voted to transfer land for the construction of housing on Fairbank Road, Old Meadow, and Pine Street. And in 1997, town meeting again voted to transfer land for the Frost Farm development on North Road. The 2000 master plan identified affordable housing as a goal of the town. And in July 2003, as we have mentioned, the Blue Ribbon Site Selection Committee was appointed. The members, Joe Bosk, Rich Davison, James Gardner, and Lydia Pastuzik, both who served as co-chairs, were the four members at large. We wanted the process to be apolitical and neutral, and we felt that these people had no particular agenda other than a willingness to serve. In addition, the members that I mentioned from the Housing Authority, the Planning Board, and the Conservation Commission were Steve Shagrew, Mike Fee, and Mark Ensign, who also serves as the chair of the Conservation Commission. At the end of their 6 months, numerous site walks, analysis, review, conversations with town council, town manager, town engineer, school committee, board of selectmen, conservation commission, the report that they wrote was issued, and the sites that they recommended were brought to the selectmen. That brings us to this point this evening. The three parcels before you are small. They are not going to contain complexes or large-scale developments, but one to two homes, as indicated in Mr. Darcy's presentation and the photo that he showed you. These are parcels that are scattered around town. We think that they continue to serve the mission that was laid out by this body 30 years ago. We believe that the public process was fair and open, and we believe that this is the direction that the town should take. We ask for your support for Articles 17 through 22, and we appreciate your continued support of affordable housing as we continue to move forward as a community.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Michael Thea, the Planning Board, will now speak.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. My name is Michael Thea. I'm a member of the Planning Board, which unanimously urges passage of Articles 17 through 22. As Mr. O'Brien mentioned, the town's master plan guides us all in formulating policy positions regarding things of this nature, including warrant articles at town meeting. And the master plan correctly notes that state housing policy sets a goal of 10% affordable housing for municipalities. Now, Sudbury, as we all know, with its concentration of single-family housing and escalating land values, has struggled to reach even 4%. And clearly, we have a long way to go in trying to provide the housing diversity that's called for under state law. Now, as a result, the Planning Board strives to support all initiatives that are designed to enhance housing opportunities for our changing population that is diverse by virtue of age or household size or income. And we believe that Articles 17 through 22 represent just these types of initiatives. Now, as has been mentioned, I think we all learned at town meeting last year that achieving our housing goals as a community really depends heavily on process, and that siting of any affordable housing in this town really has to be represent a true community consensus in order for it to work. Now, Larry O'Brien talked to you a little bit about the Blue Ribbon Housing Site Selection Committee, and it was my honor to serve on that committee. And I can tell you that there was a true dedication to fairness and process in all of the members' minds as we went about our work. There were seven voting members, one each from the Planning Board, the Conservation Commission, the Council on Aging, and the Sudbury Housing Authority, and the three remaining committee members were at large positions, two of whom served as co-chairs of the committee. We were directed to assess all town-owned sites that might be used for scattered site affordable housing projects. And we were greatly assisted in this effort by the Sudbury Housing Authority Executive Director, Joanne Howe, the town planner, Jody Kablack, and the conservation coordinator, Debbie Deneen. With their help, we were able to assemble a master list of all town-owned parcels, including parcels owned by the Sudbury Water District. And we then went about seeking input from town staff regarding obvious restrictions on each of these parcels. We then developed an objective scoring criteria for all of the parcels. Mark Ensign, who is chairman of the Conservation Commission, was instrumental in developing a scientific method for evaluating buildability issues. At our meeting on October 15th, we unanimously adopted a written policy governing our site selection procedures, which was then posted at Town Hall and on the town website. The second phase of our activity was to go through an in-depth scrutiny of all the parcels in an attempt to narrow down to a list of suitable sites. And again, with the assistance of the town planner and the conservation coordinator, we evaluated every single town-owned parcel and conducted site visits to those that were scoring highly on our evaluation criteria. It's very important to understand that we took great pains to conduct all of these activities in compliance with all of the relevant state and local laws regarding open meetings, public records, and conflict of interest. It was very, very important that we engaged in affirmative public outreach at all aspects of this analysis, and I think we did that. All of our agendas were posted at Town Hall and on the town's website. All of our meeting minutes were posted shortly after the meetings. We aggressively sought citizen input at all junctures, and we sponsored a public forum in November. And at that meeting, which was broadcast live on cable television, a detailed presentation was made regarding the scope of our work, and a great deal of information was provided to the town's residents regarding each of the preliminarily selected sites. In sum, we reviewed, analyzed, and ranked every piece of town-owned land that we could find. And it's important to note that in ranking them, we paid only careful attention to the issues of buildability. In other words, we scrupulously avoided any kind of consideration as to whether or not a particular neighborhood would welcome or shun a proposed affordable housing development in their neighborhood. And I think that's very important because we looked only at buildability. It's my belief that this process was, in addition to being exhaustive, totally apolitical and inherently fair. So as a result, the parcels you're considering tonight represent, in the committee's judgment, the most appropriate town-owned land available for the siting of this type of affordable housing. Now, you may hear people stand up tonight and speak against these proposals, and you may form the impression that they are doing so because they don't want this type of affordable housing in their neighborhood. I would respectfully suggest to you that that is not a good reason to vote against these articles. This town, it's undeniable that the community has an important social contract with its citizens, and affordable housing is part of that. We have to be committed to this goal. That's what the master plan says. In the case of the sites that are before you tonight, I believe that the selection process was open and fair and exhaustive. The funds have been appropriated. The time is now. We urge passage of Articles 17 through 22. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone wish to be heard in favor or opposed to Article 17 or 18 on Wilshire Street? Mr. Ensign.
Good evening. My name is Mark Ensign, and I reside at 44 Bent Road. I'm the chairman of the Conservation Commission as well as a member of the Blue Ribbon Housing Site Selection Committee. The Conservation Commission takes no position on this at this point in time, but I do want to remind you, all of you who have so eagerly telephoned me, that the Wetlands Administration Bylaw, Sudbury Wetlands Administration Bylaw, as well as the State Wetlands Protection Act, both are in play. So if you get up tonight and have questions about that, please bear in mind that all of the wetlands issues will still need to come before us and will have to be addressed. Typically, we don't look at our bylaw or the Wetlands Protection Act as zoning, and we hope you don't either. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Jim Gish, Rolling Lane. I'm in favor of what these articles are trying to accomplish, and in some cases the sites. I have no problem at all, and I would welcome such housing in my neighborhood. And in fact, one of the photos showing up there tonight is of a house in my neighborhood, and it's a great house. I do have some questions about this particular site. Unfortunately, the diagram in the warrant is not of sufficient detail for me to tell one way or the other how I feel about this site. It's right on the edge of the ball field. My children don't personally use this ball field, but I know that a lot of kids do. It's very heavily used. The location appears to be right on the corner. A path comes off of Wilshire Street down toward the ball field. Kids ride their bikes through there. There are lots of wonderful climbing rocks, access to the pond behind. I would feel better about this article if I could ensure that the existing uses won't be impacted negatively. Open space is also important to this town, as is the housing situation, and I appreciate the difficulty in site selection, and I'd like to vote for this, but if I could see a more detailed plan of what's proposed, I'd feel better. Otherwise, on the basis of what's in here tonight, I'm afraid I can't support this, and I'd like to.
Thank you. Housing Authority, answer the question, please. Steve Swanger. Mr. Swanger is the chairman of the Housing Authority.
At this point, we don't have a more detailed map for you, but what I can tell you is that we will not be impinging on the ball field. It's our intention to build off to the right as you come into the site from Wilshire Road, and the ball field will remain. So we don't see this impacting the recreational use at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Moderator, I'm Lydia Pastuzik. I live at 15 Griffin Lane, and I was co-chair of the Blue Ribbon Housing Site Selection Committee along with Jim Gardner of Longfellow Road. I see a number of our committee members here tonight, and we did work hard over the past year. We were comprised of interested citizens who volunteered to work on this issue at the request of the selectmen. We thoroughly documented our process. We evaluated hundreds of town-owned properties, as has been discussed. We used objective criteria, and what we bring before you tonight is a list of the best properties to accommodate affordable housing at scattered sites in our town. Our process was fair. Public input was solicited, and much public input was received throughout the process. Neighbors are bound to disagree with these recommendations, but this list does represent those properties which are best suited for the town as a whole to meet its affordable housing obligations.
Thank you. Before we go to the next speaker, this woman here at the mic, Mr. Tober, could you take your seat, and when your turn comes up, I'll call on you so you don't have to stand there if you don't want. Would that be more comfortable for you to sit down?
No, I want to be sure that I'm hurt.
You could. I'm going to call you in the order whether you're standing or sitting. So whatever it is for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's nice.
In fact, you don't even have to get up because Mr. Mike Sell just volunteered to bring you the mic when it's your turn.
Hey, I'm not that bad off.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Mr. Moderator. I'm Laura McGrath from Water Row. I think that this is a really appropriate use of CPA funds, and it's a very difficult process to go through. The competition for the land is very fierce, understandably. But and I have a question about just, I guess, the process of Article 18 itself. And it seems that if we vote in favor, the vote today sort of puts the decision, the final decision, in the hands of the board in terms of whether any of these pieces of property are in terms of judging them in terms of competing purposes in the future, that the planning piece of it is then no longer not going to come back to town meeting for vote. Is that correct? I mean, that they've been evaluated in terms of appropriateness for housing, but that, and they've been sort of vetted by other committees in the town, as Mr. O'Brien said, just through conversations as to appropriateness, and that the real hard decisions about competing uses then would be under discussion, and then the final decisions about use of that land would not come back for town meeting vote. We would vote that last decision away. Is that right?
Mr. O'Brien?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. If I understand you correctly, we're asking for two votes. One is to transfer the land to the selectmen, and the second vote, and this would be on each one of the parcels, would be the same, would be for to authorize the selectmen to sell the land to the Housing Authority, because they're a quasi-public agency, and it would be, as in the words of the article, after we have decided that there's no longer, I'm quoting, no longer necessary for municipal purposes. I will address Hudson Road in a few minutes when we get to it, because there will be some items that I want to bring to the hall's attention. But for Wilshire and Newbridge, we feel that we've fairly thoroughly vetted it, and because of their location, there would not be any other municipal uses that we saw suitable at this time.
But then it seems that we're treading lightly on the competing use issue, so that discussion isn't...
What do you mean by competing interests?
On the Newbridge Road property, it's a school property. That's a very specific, unique use of that land, we'll talk about that later.
Right, let's talk about Wilshire Street. What's the competing interest with Wilshire Street?
I guess it would be not really anything. I have no particular issue with this. I just I'm concerned for both of these properties, or three of these properties, that the discussion about how we might otherwise choose to develop the land or not develop the land is not going to be part of the discussion tonight, or a vote that we will choose to have. We have to take the land, either put it on the table or take it off the table, without being able to get wider-ranging questions answered about how we have the land might otherwise be used. In one particular concern being that we understand that the school committee is at the end of a planning cycle in terms of capacity at the Nixon School. It's just about to start the next 10-year cycle. I mean, how can we talk about letting go or holding on to a property if it were at that point in that planning cycle? And I don't want to jump to that next property at this moment necessarily, but I want to know...
Can we hold that till we get to the Newbridge property? Because that's not relevant with respect to Wilshire. Thank you.
Mr. Moderator, if I might just have one quick answer. Ma'am, to answer your question just a little bit further, the actual physical size of these sites is so small that any other municipal use, whether it would be a police station, as previously mentioned, a fire station, a town office space, even the construction of another school, not expansion, but a new freestanding school, none of these sites are large enough to support any of that. They are actually just large enough to support, as Mr. Darcy said, one or two housing units, and the housing units themselves are only a couple of thousand square feet per unit, so per structure. So we're very confident that these sites would really not be suitable for other municipal uses just because of pure size limitations of the area of the parcel.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Wayne Thomas, 203 Marlborough Road. Two questions. One, is the issue the percentage of land, percentage of units that are affordable? I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is if the good citizens of Sudbury, for example, decided to open their homes or create apartments, would that also satisfy the requirement for affordable housing? And was that, examined as an alternative?
I'm sorry?
Yes, Mr. O'Brien.
The answer is that the town does have an accessory apartment bylaw on the books currently. It is available to single-family homes in any neighborhood that might have an apartment that might be rented to an in-law or a family member, et cetera. It has to be certified as an affordable unit. I'm not aware of any citizens that have stepped forward to certify the units as affordable. They would certainly count towards the 10%, but I don't believe we have any. I think the town planner could correct me if it's otherwise. Although there are many homes that have these type of apartments that are occupied but not certified.
I wonder, sir, would that satisfy the requirement?
Affordable requirement?
Affordable requirement. It would not.
No.
The second question then would be in terms of the affordability, is it correct that it's 120% of the median income of the community?
Yes, Mr. Swanger? Or Ms. Howe, do you have the answer? If the answer is yes or no, you can tell me and I'll pass it on.
No, it's 50 to 80%.
50 to 80%,
thank
not
you.
120. Thank you. Ma'am, are you next or is it Mr. Tober? Mr. Tober, stay right there. Mr. Mike Still's going to give you the mic. Thank you. I think he is. Come on.
And you have a mic, Mike. Mr. Moderator, I would have risen. My name is Hank Tober. I live on Ames Road. And I would have risen to speak in opposition to all those articles that go into anything which has to do, which bears the label affordable. Unless you define affordable as paid for by somebody else, there is no such thing as affordable housing. First of all, Mr. Moderator, it will, at some later time in this town meeting, I shall prove that any parcel of real estate which is acquired by the town will cost the common 1 acre property owner money which is equivalent to an asking price of five times what we are led to believe it has been, the asking price by the original owner. I shall prove that. So there is nothing affordable about that. Come to that, it is even worse when it comes to the purposes of affordable housing. First of all, I'd like to criticize the proponents here. It feels so good when you think of yourself as fighting for an even playing field and taking care of people who are not as wealthy. But are you really prepared to get a high density housing project right in your backyard and face all the social consequences of that? We are not only paying five times the original thing, but the very purpose of the whole affordable idea is to get people in there who do not qualify for the property actually. So in the end, we shall also be responsible for their health care and the police station which we have to build to lock them up. And I think, you know, this whole idea of thinking of yourself as a proponent of affordable housing is nothing but intellectual masturbation.
Okay, that's about 5 minutes, Mr. Tober. So we all set? You want to just...
Yeah, well, I regret that so many people coming before me have grossly overstayed their 5 minutes, which has a tendency to really suppress any lively debate like an initiation. But really, yes, I have used my time and I...
Thank you, Mr. Tober. Yes, ma'am.
Lee Michaels, 199 Horse Pond Road. I would like to hear from my Sudbury Housing Authority on this one house. How many bedrooms is it going to be? and that this property is going to be on 1/4 acre. The pictures that were shown as examples for houses look very large for 1/4 acre. I'd like some more input about that.
Ms. Weigel, the answer to your first question is there's going to be 5 bedrooms.
In that one house?
Yes.
So it's going to be a very large house on a 1/4 acre.
It's going to be 5 bedrooms. I don't know how large the house is going to be. Do you want to know?
Mr. Moderator, it would be one structure with 2 units, 2 separate front doors. One would be possibly 3 bedrooms. The other would be 2 bedrooms.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Michaels?
It's a duplex, then?
Yes.
Yes.
Housing total number of...
Two families, three bedrooms,
seven,
and 2 bedrooms.
9 people. That would be a fairly large house to, you know, accommodate that number of people on 1/4 acre, rather high density. I would also like to know the total acreage of the ball field as it stands now.
Anybody have an answer to that question? Anybody know what the acreage of the ball field is? Anyone from Park and Rec answer that question? No, we don't have the answer, Ms. Michaels. Just tell me what
the answer. Housing?
No, we don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I know that that ball field is fairly well used, as I live on Horse Pond. And although it's only going to be 1/4 acre taken away, I feel that it may interfere with the ball playing. I'd like you to take that into consideration when you vote.
Mr. Moderator? Mr. Moderator, I do have a copy of the report, and the parcel is indicated in the Blue Ribbon Site Selection Committee report as 2.04 acres. The acreage for the SHA use would be 0.25.
Did I hear a call of the question?
Yes.
Is there a second? All those in favor of having the question called, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's well more than two-thirds. The question is before us on Article 17, Wilshire Road. Do we have it? We have it. Can we put 17 up, please? That's what we're voting on. Article 17 is in front of you on the view graph. Requires a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion as on the view graph, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed... Way over two-thirds. Thank you. We're going to move on to Article 18. Do any of the boards wish to be heard on 18, or can we just go directly to the hall? Mr. Tyler. Hang on, Mr. Tyler.
You see what goes in there? Procedural problems, huh?
Mr. Recognize Mr. Tyler for a motion to amend.
I'd like to amend this motion by replacing the four words rental housing for families with the words rental housing for senior citizen families age 55 and older.
Mark, is there any way to show that on the view graph by crossing out in hand and adding the words that he just added? Oh, it's up there now?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Everybody understand the motion to amend? Does it receive a second?
Yep.
There is a second. Mr. Tyler.
One of the things that hasn't been talked about these proposals to date until this conversation is the ongoing cost associated with building housing for younger families with children. And if there's anything that we've seen in looking at the demographics of this town through our work with the Property Tax Equity Review Committee, we've seen that it's the senior citizens who are already living in town, many of whom are having great difficulty in keeping up with their housing costs, and the availability of rental housing for these families would be much needed and appreciated. We built Frost Farm, that's now full, and so for the next generation that comes to realize they can no longer afford their housing, there's no place for them to go until that generation ages and eventually passes away and then creates some openings. So contrary to the belief that in fact there's not a need for senior citizen housing for families, there is a need. The other advantage of providing this housing as a senior citizen families is that if you're going to build five bedrooms in these houses, perhaps you could make it a triplex, create 50% more affordable units, getting you closer to this goal of 10%, because it counts, a unit of affordable housing counts whether it's for a large family or not a large family. Let's just talk about the financial implications of the bill without this amendment. If you have 8 to 11 living units, some of 3 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms, say you're having 2, 3, 4 kids, something like that, in these units, you're talking substantial annual costs. Our education costs on a fully allocated basis in town in this year's budget are about $9,100 in the Sudbury Public Schools, and I realize that's a mix of special needs and non-special needs, other costs, but when you have these affordable housing, you're also going to get a mix of students who will correspond. So the number is $9,100 in Sudbury Public Schools. I think it was around $12,200 in Lincoln Sudbury High School. So it's a big number, $11,000 a kid. So for every unit that we build that doesn't comply with this amendment, we're talking about sort of hidden costs. You won't see it in next year's budget or 5 years from now. There won't be a surcharge on your tax bill, but in fact it will be a cost that we'll all be incurring. Whereas in fact if we do this, we're going to be doing the right thing for many of the seniors who built this town, who are being forced out of their housing by the high property taxes. And so I urge you that we kind of redirect this project towards those senior citizen families age 55 and older, because we will not have continuing reoccurring costs. In fact, they'll probably contribute a surplus to the town rather than being a fiscal drag on the town. And we can, by having more units on these same, with the same number of bedrooms, we'll get more units of affordable housing out of these projects. Thank you.
This is on the motion to amend. Yes, sir.
Yes. Speaking on this motion, I appreciate Mr. Tyler's...
Could you just identify yourself?
I'm sorry. This is Steve Shugrue, 18 Briar Patch Lane, member of the Sudbury Housing Authority and the Blue Ribbon Committee for us. Site selection of housing. I appreciate Mr. Tyler's concern for senior citizens in this town. In fact, my own mother and I looked at the housing at Musketaquid Village for her, for my mother. It's a lovely place. The fact remains, however, that the demand is for family housing and not for elderly housing. There have only been one or two Sudbury residents who qualify for elderly housing who have asked to be in the Musketaquid Village in the past year. Any senior living in Sudbury who wants to live in Musketaquid Village would probably get in just a couple of months. It's a very short waiting list. On the other hand, rental housing for families is another story. We have recently had one woman who removed herself from the list after being on the list for 9 years. So that will give you an idea of where the need is, and please consider that when you vote on all of these articles, that there are people out there who do need rental housing. And please remember also that the Sudbury Housing Authority is charged only with rental housing, taking care of rental housing. There is another committee in town, which is fairly new, looking into other ways of getting people of low and moderate means into the Sudbury. Thank you very much.
Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I would just like to bring to the Hall's attention the fact that the amendment that has been put forth should be voted down. The Board of Selectmen is unanimously opposed to it. One of the reasons that we are opposed to it is that federal law states that when using Chapter 40B of the Mass laws, which we will be using to build these structures on lots that are under 40,000 square feet, which is what our zoning calls for, you cannot age restrict 40B type developments that are under 5 acres in total size. None of these proposals are in excess of 5 acres, and therefore this would be an illegal restriction and could not be enforced. We urge your defeat of this amendment.
Mr. Reed?
Frank Reed, Newbridge Road. The thinking that went into Mr. Tyler's argument is fundamentally flawed, in that the idea that we would be providing housing for our seniors who can no longer afford to live in their homes would only mean that they sold their home to a family with children that would then populate the schools the way Mr. Tyler is so fearful. I recommend defeat of this amendment.
Mr. Cole?
Mr. Moderator, I guess my command of the English language is probably about as good as the average, but I really have a little difficulty understanding what the term senior citizen families age 55 and older means. Can we have a clarification of that, maybe?
Mr. Tyler?
Well, I'm 55, and I consider myself with my wife to be a family, and perhaps there are some of you that don't think of seniors as, in fact, families, or that your grannies and grandpas and whatnot aren't families, but we certainly consider ourselves families. I'd like to speak to Mr. O'Brien's point. It's my understanding the Sudbury Housing Authority is not required to comply with the Sudbury zoning bylaws whatsoever. They're exempt, so they don't have to go for 40B type development whatsoever. They're just simply exempt from the zoning bylaw. So the town is prepared to proceed to build one way or the other, not in compliance with our zoning bylaw. That is, there's probably 1 acre zoning down there, probably in this parcel. There's probably all the houses around have 1 acre, and they want to put a duplex on a quarter of an acre. So that's 8 times the density already. So to say that there's some sort of technicality that we're going to be complying with 40B to do this, I mean, that seems a little silly. I mean, they can build it without going through zoning. They can declare it affordable and get counted into, get the brownie points that we get with the state. So that's just not a reason to vote against it. Mr. Reap has a very good point, yes. When I started my journey of understanding what's going on with the seniors in this town, I too felt like we should figure out ways to keep them in their houses. But it's clear the town doesn't want to provide reasonable property tax relief for needy seniors. We saw that a week ago Wednesday. They'd rather spend, in this case, a couple hundred thousand dollars a year on an ongoing basis forever to maybe help six, eight, nine families that don't even live in Sudbury right now, rather bring in more people. And then a little later on, we're going to be voting on a proposal whose primary rationale is that we're not going to build houses for affluent families that might pay their own weight. So, frankly, I don't understand any of this. Just beyond my comprehension.
Okay. The question has been moved. Is there a second? All those in favor of calling the question, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? We're going to vote on the motion to amend that you see at the bottom of the view graph to replace rental housing for families with rental housing for senior citizen families age 55 and older. All those in favor of the motion to amend, this is a majority vote. All those in favor of the motion to amend, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's overwhelmingly defeated. Are we ready for the main motion? Can we see the main motion on the view graph, please? This is Article 18, the second part of Wiltshire Road. And you see it in front of you. All those, this is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the main motion, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's not close. It's well over two-thirds. Thank you. We're going to move on to Article 19. Again, before we have the motion, I'll remind you we're now talking about Newbridge Road. Article 19 is to access it to the selectmen, and Article 20 is for the selectmen to transfer it to the housing authority. Each one requires a two-thirds vote. As we did with 17 and 18, we will discuss these together, but vote them separately. I recognize John Darcy of
19 and 20, Mr. Moderator.
19 and 20, yes. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. I recognize Mr. Darcy, the Housing Authority, for the motion and then the presentation.
Mr. Moderator, would you like me to read both motions or one now and one later?
No. Why don't you read? Why don't you read them both now, and then we'll discuss them both, and we'll vote on just one.
Article 19, move to transfer the parcel of land shown on sketch prepared by the Town of Sudbury Engineering Department, entitled Option 4, area equals 20,151 plus or minus square feet, and as shown on the overhead projection, and being a portion of the land off Newbridge Road, shown as parcel 030 on town property map F10. From the control of the Sudbury School Department to the Board of Selectmen for the purpose of sale to the Sudbury Housing Authority for the construction of up to two houses of affordable rental housing for families, provided that such transfer take place within 1 year of the date of this vote, subject to a determination by the board having custody of the land that it is no longer necessary for school purposes.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. Mr. Darcy, you want to read
Article 20?
We'll take a second, then we'll have discussion on both.
Article 20, move to authorize the selectmen to execute a deed or deeds conveying in fee simple the parcel of land shown on sketch prepared by the Town of Sudbury Engineering Department entitled Option 4, area equals 20,151 plus or minus square feet, and as shown on the overhead projection, and being a portion of the land off Newbridge Road, shown as parcel 030 on town property map F10, to the Sudbury Housing Authority for the purpose of constructing up to two houses of affordable rental housing for families for a sum of no more than $1 and upon such other terms as the selectmen shall consider proper, provided that such conveyance takes place within 1 year of the date of this vote, subject to a determination by the board having custody of the land is no longer necessary for school purposes.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Darcy, for presentation. And you may speak to both articles.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Well, I think the date on this one is We'll start with 2004, because you already saw 2003. I will not rehash that. As I explained during the last article, this process really does have four steps. And your vote tonight will take care of the second step. We then have to secure the final funding, and we have to secure construction permits. Why should you vote for this? Again, 80% of you said we should move forward. Okay. Articles 19 and 20, Newbridge Road. I do want to take one, I don't want to just say this is just like the last article, because I don't think that it will sound like the last article to some folks. So I did want to take a minute or two to speak about the Newbridge Road site. Some of you may have seen, as I have, flyers that people handed out to try and educate you as to their point of view. The flyers that I saw have us building on the edge of a lake or a pond. It's somewhat misleading. There is no lake or pond next to the Nixon School. There are wetlands, and we need to comply with the restrictions to stay away from wetlands. But there is not a blue lake next to the space that we would occupy. In addition, the opponents to the Newbridge site have, in this flyer and at other times, have accused the Sudbury School Committee of simply willy-nilly giving away precious resources, and woe be us if we need them later on for school. And many times point to the Loring School issue as, is this happening all over again? This characterization of the school committee couldn't be further from the truth. The reality is that the Sudbury School Committee graciously listened to our proposals that we've taken to them over the past year and a half. They graciously listened to us, they challenged us, they asked us questions, they didn't accept what we had to say at all. There was no willy-nilly about it. They walked in the muck and the snow around every site that we asked about. And in the end, they only gave us a pittance of what we asked for. They really turned us down. We asked them for other sites. Specifically, we asked them for some land over near Curtis that, in our humble view, they wouldn't have any use for, but it would make a perfect site for a house or two. They walked the site, they talked to each other, they challenged the issues, and they said, nope, sorry, we're not going to even consider that for you. We may have future use for that. We don't know what that future use might be right now, but we're not giving up our options. They didn't just hand over this property. And the piece of property that they did say that might serve some other town need is a very tiny parcel of land. And in their judgment, and they have spent time thinking about this, and they know Loring School's history as well, that this is not where future expansions of the Nixon School may go. This piece of land, the best use, the highest and best use for this parcel is for a home. That's the highest and best use for this town. And the school committee knows that. And we appreciate, they gave us a pittance, they turned us down mostly, but we appreciate it. I'm not trying to say we don't. But the reality is that they turned us down. Okay? And as a taxpayer and as a parent of children in the school systems, I appreciate their thoughtfulness. I had mixed feelings, of course, when they turned us down. Again, on the articles before you, are they controversial? Yes. Perhaps this one will be more controversial than the last. In the end, we're talking about one or two houses here. Mr. Tyler's recommendation about senior citizens, if it comes up again. These houses are open to families of all ages.
We have one senior family presently living in family housing that we operate now. We do not discriminate based on age. If there's a senior family who wants to apply for this, these units, they will. His other statement that perhaps a triplex of a might work of two and one. Well, this is one of our goals that we stated right from the beginning in our proposal last year, was that we would like one of these homes, at least one of these homes, to be a triplex, a two-bedroom, two-bedroom, and one-bedroom, because there are some individuals who are not seniors, and there are some individuals where there's one child still at home who live in a larger unit, and we would be able to downsize them into a smaller unit, and that would free up a two or a three bedroom unit somewhere else in town. So I thank you for those suggestions. They're both very good, and we plan to put both of those into practice. And again, you know, this is a little bit, it's one piece of the package, but it's the right thing for Sudbury to do. You see the houses again, we're not out to build anything, we're not out to build a project next to anyone's home. In some respects, I think that if I lived across the street from a school building, that a house between my house and the school might even soften the issue. So, thank you very much for your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkinson of the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Mr. O'Brien, Selectman.
I just wanted to point out to the hall, those of you that may recall these articles from last year will recall that the original proposal is the entire area, both green and blue, outlined on this map. And as Mr. Darcy indicated, through numerous meetings with the school committee, through much deliberation on their part, through very thoughtful deliberation, they analyzed and assessed and evaluated the condition at the Nixon School. They certainly looked at, as they constantly do, school population and its movement. They evaluated things like need for a future septic system. They evaluated need for additional playing area, parking spaces, all of the relevant needs that go with the functionality and operation of a school building. And in assessing all of that, they determined that the area that was requested was too great an area, as Mr. Darcy indicated. They did feel that based on the topography of the land and going out and doing site walks and having the area marked off by the town engineer, that the far corner that's indicated in blue, the current request, is the area. It is approximately a quarter of an acre, and it represents the area that the school committee feels that they can comfortably provide for the construction of affordable housing without impinging or having any impact on future potential plans or uses at the Nixon School. So we appreciate their thoughtfulness on this. We appreciate their due diligence, and we feel that this small area, we certainly agree with them, and we appreciate their willingness to make this available. And we do not think that in the overall scheme of things at the Nixon School, this is going to stand in the way of any long-range development or use of the rest of the parcel. So we thank you for your vote and your fair and honest consideration of this.
So, Brian, did you state the position of the Board of Selectmen on this article?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board is unanimously in support of this revised proposal for this reduced site.
Mr. Fee for the Planning Board.
Michael Fee on behalf of the Planning Board. The Planning Board unanimously supports passage of Articles 19 and 20. I'm told that the parcel previously identified as being a quarter acre is actually a half acre, 20,000 square feet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fee. Mr. Ovian.
I'd like to be recognized.
Bethora, 98 Newbridge Road.
Hang on. Who's speaking here?
We're going to like to make a presentation, Mr. Moderator.
You'd like to do it together?
Together.
5 minutes total.
5 minutes.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Beth Borup. I live at 98 Newbridge Road. I am not an abutter to this property. I'm speaking tonight as a concerned parent. I've lived in Sudbury for 5 years, and I have three small children. The property on Newbridge Road, as we have established, is part of Nixon's school property. And at this point, Nixon is reaching capacity. The Nixon school parents are in the best position to attest to the fact that Nixon is outgrowing the current facility, and there are examples of that that they encounter on a day-to-day basis, growing class sizes, multi-purpose floor rooms, the extended day program, which is running out of space and may have to move off-site, and the addition of classes at certain grade levels. An expansion of Nixon School is likely in the near future. At this point, however, we don't have a concrete long-term plan for exactly how we will accommodate our school growth and manage our space. Earlier this year, the school committee did agree that it's time to formally revisit our space planning. The data, the demographic data that we have now, is reaching the end of its 10-year lifespan. It was developed in the 95-96 timeframe, so it's time to formally take another look at that. So we are approaching a new planning phase. The growth rate of the elementary school population also, as we know, continues to grow. The Superintendent Brackett addressed this yesterday when he talked about the increasing enrollment at the kindergarten level. And the town report also mentioned this, saying that if we continue to add 50 to 100 students to our school system each year, we will seriously need to consider adding an elementary school site within the next 5 years. So the bottom line of all this is that space is getting tight. We continue to grow. We need to determine formally, in a long-term perspective, what the precise needs are for our schools and what is in the best interest of our schools. It is not appropriate to give up this precious, scarce commodity of school land for a non-school purpose. If we do transfer this land, then we will lose the ability to regain that contiguous space as part of the Nixon property. We may very likely limit our expansion options or lead ourselves to have to choose more costly alternatives when we do expand. This could be detrimental not just to Nixon, but the entire school system as part of the entire town. Historically, at Fairbanks and Horse Pond, those are two schools that we gave up thinking that we wouldn't need the space. And in hindsight, we would have likely benefited from that space. And I'm encouraging us to take advantage of this opportunity. We see that we're getting crunched for space. This is an opportunity. We see our growth. And I am encouraging you to oppose this article so that we can retain this useful resource for our schools. And Lee has a few words.
Thank you. My name is Lee Ovian. I'm a lifelong resident of the town of Sudbury. I stand in front of you tonight to talk a little bit about Nixon. I came to meeting tonight not as an abutter. I'm in favor of affordable housing. However, I'm a little concerned about the steps that have been taken with regard to this subject. I happen to have had the honor of being a son of a father who was involved in the school committee here for a number of years and active in the community. The map that we put up on the board tonight is one that we wanted to show you, the general public, what we are dealing with here. We're not asking you to look at this article and say that affordable housing is a bad thing. We're not asking you to say that affordable housing shouldn't be brought to this this forum. What we're asking you for is to consider all the valuable points of the land issues, the school expansion issues. All the major boards that we heard from in the last 2 days have talked about these issues. And it's important for us to recognize that we have a growing student population, we have a limited number of schools that we can work with, and when you take into consideration the grounds, the playing fields, the parking lot, the bus and entrances and exits points, these are all issues that have to be looked at before a study can be commensurate, a project can be commensurated. When we ask the town for details as far as where the school's going to be down the road? We heard we don't have a plan. We're assuming, I underscore, we're assuming that we will not need this space. And I urge you people to remember, and I'll leave you with this one point, would you invest your money in something that you were not sure of? And our concern is that we aren't sure where the school is going to be and what the needs are. Thank you. I urge you to vote no against this article.
Thank you. Mr. Quirk?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Vincent Quirk, Newbridge Road. I attended maybe 10% of the Blue Ribbon Committee meetings, and I was exhausted after them, so I can appreciate the long and arduous process that has gone on for the past couple of years. But in the end, this article is not about affordable housing. It's not a neighborhood issue. It's a Sudbury school issue. We all pay very high taxes to live in Sudbury, and the schools are the greatest asset and largest expense that we have. So I'm very surprised that the town would even consider giving away school land, knowing that the following four circumstances exist or are on the horizon. Number one, full-day kindergarten is coming to Sudbury sooner rather than later. I assume that that means the number of kindergarten classrooms will need to double. Number two, the school committee is already planning to expand the Nixon School by 6 to 8 classrooms. I'm not sure if it was on the graphic that was just up, so I want to address that. Number three, according to the 2003 town report, the town will be looking to build another elementary school in the next 5 years. And number four, we have a chronic shortage of playing fields in this town. With the scarcity and price of land in Sudbury, building a new school may mean that we'll have to build a new building next to the existing Nixon School, just like we did for Curtis and just like we're doing for the high school. That means we'll need space for two schools, playgrounds, ball fields, septic, future septic expansion, parking, contractor parking, buffers, etc. Now, the selectmen can claim that there'll be no possible use of this land, but if you can build a house on it, I don't see why you couldn't build kindergarten classrooms on it or at least have a soccer field on it. In my opinion, giving away school land is never the right thing to do. But be that as it may, giving away school land is not prudent unless a comprehensive plan for school expansion is in place. And for the four reasons previously stated, I believe that this article will only constrain the town and add substantial costs to future school expansion. Nobody knows what the future needs of the town will be. It is not unreasonable to wait until a thorough and professional plan is in place before we vote to give school land away. If you think it's difficult to find small plots of land for the Sudbury Housing Authority to build houses on, think how difficult it will be to try to find 15 or 20 acres to build a new school on. Town officials are on a very slippery slope when they decide to give away the town's most precious and limited assets without a long-range plan with conservative assumptions and built-in contingencies in place. There's been some references to the master plan in the presentation by the proponents. And I agree, the master plan does talk about housing diversity being a good thing, but it also talks about preserving the rural character of Sudbury, which I presume means upholding zoning and setback laws, and it also talks about protecting the schools. I urge all of the voters to vote no on this article. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Quirk.
Thank you.
Strikes me that almost every speaker has talked about the school committee, Mr. Braun. Can we hear from the school committee as to whether or not you considered this and what the position of the school committee is, please?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Richard Robison, member of the Sudbury School Committee, live at 17 Homestead Street. The school committee has already been indicated, has been thoughtfully considering these proposals that came to us from the Blue Ribbon Committee related to the siting of housing on this particular parcel of land. As was already indicated, the original request was for a significant amount of property, more than what ultimately we determined we could possibly spare. And as a result of our conversations, we considered almost all of the things that have been mentioned. I think all of the things that have been mentioned here already related to potential future use, expansion of classrooms, replication of the septic system, parking areas, play areas, the topography of the land, whether it could be used as recreation space, and after walking the land several times, determined that there's really not a feasible or reasonable use for that particular parcel of land in that small amount of space. We felt like we wanted to support the efforts of the town, which voted to build affordable housing, recognizing that land is scarce, and that we would do whatever we could to support the efforts of the town.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Karen Crone, 64 Meadowbrook Circle. 10 years ago, the school committee worked with a variety of town boards, town employees, and citizens to try to identify land that was suitable for town use. None was found. Several years later, an additional half acre of land abutting the Loring site was approved by the town for school use. At the 11th hour, that land became unavailable due to conservation issues. Land suitable for school use is a rare commodity. It is impossible to predict what the educational needs of this town are going to be 15, 20, or 50 years from now. I believe it is imprudent to forever limit the options available to the town to meet these future needs. And just as an additional note, back in 1994, when the school committee brought before the town a comprehensive capital plan for the K-8 school system, the town very graciously approved the first four elements of that plan. The school committee at the time held out the fifth element of that plan for funding, which was the potential expansion of the Nixon School, because the school committee at that time said that a new study needed to be done in 2002-2003 to, number one, do a completely new set of 10-year demographics, because as you understand, children enter our school system between the age of 3 and 5. So when you're doing 10-year demographic projections, you're counting children who haven't yet been born. So what you're able to do 10 years down the road is take a look at how your projections mapped onto the actual birth rates and how actual birth rates translated into actual enrollments. That comprehensive study of a new 10-year assessment of birth rates, school enrollment projections, and school needs, to my knowledge, has not been done. There are potential needs that are going to be circulating in this next 10-year plan that needs to be done. Whether or not administrative offices are needed based on what the town decides about use of space at the Fairbank. The potential for a preschool / early childhood center, given what's happening with our population and the numbers of children coming in that we're servicing beginning at age 3, and our increasing enrollments. I urge defeat of this article.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Adam Miller, Knobscott Road. I saw earlier we had a topographical picture of this area, and also there was a aerial photograph off to the side of one of the transparencies that the gentleman from the school committee had up there. I was hoping we could see those again. They're both transparencies.
Why don't you keep going while they're looking for it?
I just wanted to see those to be able to look at the area in question.
Is that what you want to see?
Yes. Okay. And also the aerial photograph.
Yeah, that's it, Mary.
You all set? Great. Yes, sir.
I'm a little bit confused. In certain areas on the screen, it said 1 to 2 houses. In the article in here, it says up to 3 houses. Have we decided what we're going to be putting in there?
Yes, Housing Authority, Mr. Darcy.
The warrant articles are due in December, and the school committee had yet to narrow the parcel of land down to what you see in front of you. So the existing parcel that's proposed, we are planning, and the warrant in the article, the present article, says we can build up 1 or 2 houses. That will depend on septic system, wetlands, testing of the land, and what it really could accommodate. The warrant article was originally proposed for a larger amount of land, but we didn't get the larger amount of land. And that's why the article you see before you is different from the article within the warrant.
Thank you. I have another comment, and that is, if the whole process is supposed to be to ultimately get to a 10% affordable housing for the town, we're never going to make it doing it this way. We're looking at 3, 4, 5 houses maybe, and it's taken us, ultimately it'll take us 4, 5, 6 years. We will have a less percentage of affordable housing at the end of that time than we have now. There are more houses being built. So it doesn't quite make sense to me. Are we all looking for a large complex somewhere and the individual houses? To do it on an individual house basis, you're going to be talking about there aren't enough locations in town.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Van Dyke.
Yes, Kirsten Van Dyke, 37 Landham Road. I urge support of this article. The Board of Selectmen and Planning Board all obviously have done their homework, the Blue Ribbon Siting Committee, and we have heard from a representative from the school board that has clearly stated on more than one occasion in the last 40 minutes that site will not be considered an optimal site for future development for the school, and that it is the best use for a home, whether it is an affordable home or a home for other citizens, is your moral decision, and your vote for this article to pass will conclude that. I support this article, and I urge all of you to vote your conscience.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Question's been called. Is there a second? All those in favor of calling the question, please. Sir, unless you're at the microphone, you cannot ask a question. The question's been called. Is there a second? All those in favor of the calling of the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, passes by more than two-thirds. We'll now, this is on Article 19, which you see in front of you, unamended. It has been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. I'm going to try it one more time. All those in favor of the question, please rise and raise your cards. Thank you. May be seated. All those opposed, please stand and raise your cards. Thank you. Thank you. The vote was actually pretty close if there were a majority. Therefore, it does not pass. It required a two-thirds. We're on to Article 20. Yes, Mr. We're on Article 20. What happens to plan?
This is Mr. Moderator. We'll move to IP 20.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Is there a second? Does anybody wish to be heard on the indefinite postponement? All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It passes. We will move on to Article 21. This is transfer of land off Hudson Road to the Selectmen. Article 22 is then to transfer from the Selectmen to the Housing Authority. Each requires a two-thirds vote for the motions on Article 21 and 22. We'll ask Mr. Darcy to make the motion, please.
Move in the words of the article, provided that such transfer take place within 2 years of the date of this vote, subject to a determination by the board having custody of the land that it is no longer necessary for municipal purposes.
Is there a second? Thank you. Want to read the motion on Article 22?
Yes. Article 22. Move in the words of the article, provided that such conveyance takes place within 2 years of the date of this vote, subject to a determination by the board having custody of the land that it is no longer necessary for municipal purposes.
Is there a second? I see a second. Mr. Darcy, may I speak to both articles?
This site appears in your warrant article. The Hudson Road site is in between the existing fire station and the Temple Beth El. And this site too would potentially be suitable for up to two affordable family homes, affordable houses, which would have affordable family units in it. We feel that this site, like the others, is the highest and best use currently known for the town. Again, as in the other articles, the conveyance from the selectmen to the housing authority would not occur if, in the judgment of the selectmen, there came to be known a higher and best use. So your voting in favor of this tonight would authorize them to transfer this land to them for sale and then eventually sell it to us if after full review they feel that that's still the best course of action. Your voting tonight on this, your voting yes on this, does not require them tomorrow to turn this land over to us. It allows them to do it within 1 year's time.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Mr. O'Brien from the Selectmen?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The earlier on the first set of articles, there was a question from the floor concerning future municipal use and long-range planning. Mr. Darcy tactfully left the floor open for me to address the subject. The Board of Selectmen unanimously urged support of this. We do feel that it's necessary to inform you that because of the location of this particular parcel, as Mr. Darcy indicated, adjacent to the main fire station on Hudson Road at the intersection of Route 27 and next to Temple Beth
sell. This site is worthy of consideration of a potential new police station and potential combined dispatch center, and it would be imprudent of the Board of Selectmen to transfer it to the Sudbury Housing Authority without prior vetting and evaluation of this property for that potential higher and greater municipal need. In the event that we did not, for some reason, find it suitable for that public safety need, we would then, within the two-year period stated in the article, pass the property along to the Sudbury Housing Authority. So we urge your support of this with the proviso and understanding that we will be taking a pause. We believe the pause will take us about 6 months to do proper due diligence on the property for the public safety municipal use evaluation. And then if available, we will forward it on to the Housing Authority for the construction of the affordable housing units. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Mr. Fee of the Planning Board.
Michael Fee, once again, for the Planning Board. The Planning Board unanimously supports passage of this article.
Thank you, Mr. Fee. Anyone wish to be heard on Articles 21 and 22? Yes, Mr. Tyler.
I think Mr. O'Brien clearly indicated to us why we should not pass these two articles tonight. That is to say, I think this town meeting should be given the benefit of the study on the police station and then make a decision if we want it. If, in fact, at that point they decide it's surplus, then we can, in fact, vote to turn it over. I would also mention that if it's not a suitable site for a police station, perhaps it's a suitable site for a small preschool center or something like that, a need that was indicated that we have in, or we may have in town in the future. It might be a suitable site for a new central offices for the school staff. And I understand because space is getting tight at Fairbanks, that's another town need coming up. So to devote what appears to be a fairly large site that might, which has area around it and open space, et cetera, to devote that site to one or two housing units just doesn't seem appropriate in any case. And then for all these other reasons, it seems like a particularly poor idea at this time to vote this measure. I think that, as Mr. O'Brien says, there are competing interests that are coming to fore, and as they start to get into this, I think they're going to find even more of them. So why don't we let that process occur first?
Yes, sir.
Anthony Schultz, 96 Hudson Road. I actually think the highest and best use of this property is just to leave it the way it is. It's kind of an ecologically important wetlands area that drains from the wetlands across Hudson Road down into the Black Ponds of the Gray Reservation. And secondly, this was built as scattered site affordable housing, yet it is adjacent to the 60-unit Miskatonic Village, so that seems more like lumped-together siting to me. And thirdly, I was going to say that it would be imprudent to give the land away if it, in fact, could be used as a centrally located public safety complex with the fire station being there. But that's been addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Blacker?
Thank you. I think the hall should commend Mr. O'Brien for being forthright and telling you exactly what the issues are before this land gets transferred. This is why we have an election, and this is why we vote selectmen, because we want to put in their hands the ability to make a decision. Now, if we want, we can, as Mr. Tyler would have us, micromanage every single item that comes to town and micromanage them at town meeting. And as the hall has seen from most of the amendments that get brought up at town meeting, they don't pass because they haven't been given the thought, the scrutiny that can be given at committee meetings and discussions with groups for and against and so on and so forth. But I think the very reason that Mr. O'Brien came forward and said there is an issue as to whether this property should be used for public safety, and we will not give it away until then, is the very reason we should vote in favor of this right now, so that 2 years from now, or next year, or we don't have to come back, do it again, hear the exact same argument, and start the whole process over again. And I should also let you know, I voted against the last one, because I felt that the school issue, I didn't know. And I didn't feel I got the answer from the school committee to say, look, there is no way in hell that we can ever use that to build anything of a school. I didn't hear that. So I voted against it. But this one, you got to vote in favor of it.
Let's go.
Mr. Moderator, I find that the last speaker's argument to be pretty tortured. I think that Mr. O'Brien's point that they don't really know. I don't like the hypothetical and contingency aspect of this. I don't have any opinion. I don't know whether that's a good place to put the police dispatcher station or not. But once they make that decision, then they can come to the town meeting and say, we've made this decision. We don't want to use the land for that. Let's use it for housing, and that's fine. But what we're doing, if we pass this thing tonight, is we're putting it so that in a position for the housing authority and the selectmen to cut a deal on how this land gets used that completely bypasses the town meeting and completely bypasses any arguments that come up for or against using it for the purpose of the police and fire dispatcher station. So I think that the timing is wrong. I don't think that by defeating this tonight, we're saying that we don't think that it's a good idea necessarily to use it for housing, but it's, we shouldn't be passing the buck this way. I don't think that this is micromanaging.
I do.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tipling Rock Road. So the impression that you get here tonight is that we just want to build this housing because we're all do-gooders, as I think somebody called us, and that there is gain in and of itself, but I believe, isn't there still a fairly severe stick that if we are not making progress towards 10% affordable housing, that there's a comprehensive permit process? Is that still in effect?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Could somebody just say two sentences on what that is, just so that people realize that it is in our own self-interest as selfish people to build this housing?
Mr. O'Brien?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The speaker is correct. The affordable housing requirements of the state say that each community should have 10% affordable housing as part of its inventory. We currently do not. We are at approximately 3%. Also, as you read your newspaper week in and week out, you will read that there are large, substantial developments that are going up all across the state because developers, when utilizing Chapter 40B of the laws of the Commonwealth, are allowed to bypass all local zoning. And in bypassing local zoning, they must only comply with wastewater treatment, which in Sudbury, of course, is septic, and that would be Title V, and also the Wetlands Protection Act. Other than that, if a parcel can support an extremely high density, then you would be allowed to build it. As a point of reference, the development that's going up on Route 20 across from Bullfinch's restaurant was approved and is being built by the developer in cooperation with the town at 16 units. It did perk out and could have been as much as 36 units. That parcel is 2.3 acres in size. Obviously, to put 36 units, you'd be looking at a 3 or 4 story building. So the question is appropriate. And the construction, the ability of the town to show that we're moving towards reaching the 10%, that we're taking the initiative to make affordable housing available and to add to our inventory, does give us some protection under the current statute as it's been revised over the last couple of years and allows us to hold off developers from coming in with ramrod-type development.
Question's been called. Is there a second? There is. All those in favor of the question being voted on, raise your cards. All those opposed, passes well more than 2/3. Main motion is on the view graph before you. We're voting on Article 21. It requires a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph, in favor, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It's pretty clear that it's well over two-thirds, but we'll take a standing count. All those in favor of the motion, please rise, raise your cards. Thank you. All those opposed, please rise and hold your cards up. Thank you. It got way over two-thirds. Article 22. We need a vote on Article 22 as people wish to be heard. Mr. Tyler.
I'd like to talk about this threat that was indicated, 40B. My understanding of the law is that if we're at 3% now and whether we pass this one or not isn't going to make any difference, we're still going to be subject to 40B threat. In fact, if we pass 5 of them tonight, probably 10 of them tonight, maybe even 30 of them tonight, we'd probably still be subject to that threat. So the idea that this is somehow going to get relieve us from some sort of potential threat from these ogre developers who come in with these big sticks, you know, into our midst, is just not appropriate. So I'm speaking against this article. What's the point of it?
Whoa. Mr. Tyler, you address the chair. You don't address anyone in the hall. I didn't hear his point of order. You may continue.
Thank you. Okay. So I urge, if some of those of you voted for that last article with the idea that somehow it was going to get us out of this threat, reconsider your vote and vote against this one.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 21? Anyone care to answer that question, or are we all set for a vote? Mr. Swanger, the Housing Authority.
I just wanted to clarify this because it comes up all the time. The state is in the process of reconsidering 40B and what will be considered affordable. The one thing that's very clearly consistent in all of the suggestions that have been made is that they're going to look to not just the 10% number, but also the efforts that towns have made. Now, if we move up from 3% to 4 or 5% because a private developer has come into town, that's not going to do us much good. But if we begin to move towards 10% because the town has taken efforts itself and has donated land and a town agency has worked to build on that land, that's going to count for a lot. And when a private developer comes in and wants to build something that's out of scale to the town and the town wants to defeat that, the actions that we're taking tonight will stand us in very good stead with the state. Thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor of Article 22 as shown on the view graph, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's even less than the last time. It's even more overwhelmingly in the two-thirds department. I declare 22 is passed. So moving to Article 23, Mark Kablak, CPC Chair, for a motion.
Mr. Moderator, I move in the words of the motion.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Kablak.
Good evening. I'm Mark Kablak. I'm the chair of the Community Preservation Committee.
I'd like to use this opportunity to give a little bit of overview on the Community Preservation Act and then describe the next series of articles, all of which fall under the category of community preservation funding. The Community Preservation Act was adopted in the town of Sudbury in 2002. It has two main components to it. One is that it is a planning tool that the town can use for looking at projects that fall within four main criteria identified by the Act. Those four criteria are open space, historic preservation, community housing, and recreation. The other main component of the Act is that there is a state matching program for every dollar raised in the town, and I'll get to some more specifics on that in a second. As a result of adopting the Community Preservation Act in 2002, the Community Preservation Committee was formed. It is a 9-member committee. I serve as one of two at-large members. The other at-large member is Diane Goldberg. And the other 7 members are members that are represented by other committees and boards in the town. And I would just like to take a minute to announce each of their names. These folks really do double duty in the sense that they attend their own committee and board meetings and then as many as 2 meetings a month to attend Community Preservation Act meetings. And those members are Kirsten Rupinian on behalf of the Board of Selectmen, Chris Morley on behalf of the Planning Board, Sheila Stewart on behalf of the Finance Committee, Steve Swanger on behalf of the Housing Authority, Dick Bell on behalf of the Conservation Commission, Carol Wolf on behalf of the Historical Commission, and Paul Griffin on behalf of Park and Rec. The Act generates funds from two sources. When we adopted the Community Preservation Act in 2002, we enacted a local surcharge of 3%, which is levied in accordance with the real estate tax levy in the town. The funds that we are spending now are part of that tax levy, and as a result, no funds generated through a community preservation project will result in any further increase in taxes. It's already part of what we're paying currently. The local surcharge, the 3% local surcharge that was enacted in 2002, raises roughly $1 million a year. That was the case in 2003, it was the case in 2004, and we have budgeted to be the case in 2005. The other main component of the Act, which I mentioned earlier, is the state matching fund. A large part of the incentive for Sudbury to adopt this Act in 2002 was that the state at the time adopted its own set of criteria by which it would generate revenue. That revenue is generated by assessing fees at the Registry of Deeds, so the money is put aside in a fund, and the fund is distributed in October of each year to those communities that have adopted the Community Preservation Act and have collected local surcharge revenues. The current fund balance is $116 million. It's reflective of money generated over the past years, again as a result of fees collected at the Registry of Deeds. The awards that have been given to the town of Sudbury already reflect a dollar-for-dollar match on every dollar raised in the town. Now, there's a handout that has been left at the back hall, and it addresses the fact that this dollar-for-dollar match is not a guarantee, and that is correct. Currently, there are 61 cities and towns throughout the state of Massachusetts that have adopted the Community Preservation Act. Sudbury is one of the 61. As more cities and towns adopt the Act, more people share in the pool of funds that is generated at the state level, and in fact, the dollar-for-dollar match can go down. But because of the huge surplus currently, and the fact that only 61 communities over the last 3 years have adopted the Community Preservation Act, all current estimates are that the dollar-for-dollar match will continue into the near future. In fact, in recent debates before the Metropolitan Area Planning Council,
it was stated, and I quote, that communities that adopt the CPA are likely to continue to receive the 100% match for locally derived funds for the foreseeable future. Again, there's no guarantee on this, and there have been numerous attempts by the state legislature, who is always looking for money, particularly in these stressed fiscal times, to raid that fund. But all of the attempts over the past 2 years have failed, and we can only work to continue to call on our legislators to uphold the spirit and intent of the Community Preservation Act as it was originally passed by our legislature and then accepted by this town. With the Act, there are some statutory spending requirements. The Community Preservation Act requires us to either spend or reserve 10% of our annual budget in three of the four core categories of the Act. And those three core categories are open space, historic preservation, and community housing. For whatever reason, recreation was left out of those core categories. But of those four, the three are open space, community housing, and historic preservation. The balance of CPA revenues, once the 10% has been allocated to each of those core categories, can be spent on any of the four categories under the Act, including recreation. The funds also allow the committee to budget for administrative expenses up to 5% of annual revenues. When we first established ourselves as a committee, we established a budget. We wanted to proceed conservatively. Based on that, we only budget in any one calendar year, or fiscal year, I should say, on 90% of the estimated revenues, both from the local surcharge and the state match. We also attempt to fund each of the categories at or near the 10% level and reserve as much of the fund as we can for future projects, knowing that we have ideas in mind and properties that are likely to come up within the short term that we will want to be able to act on quickly and be prepared for. We also voted as a committee to bond land acquisitions and capital-intensive projects for a number of reasons. First, we wanted to spread the burden of the payment of those over a broad period of time. And secondly, again, we wanted to reserve a pool of money to be able to act on future projects as quickly as possible and as they come up. I'd like to reference you to page 24 of the warrant, which is an outline of the budget that we have proposed. The top half of the chart shows total revenues through fiscal year 05, which would include the expected state match of funds in October of that year. The 3 years combined, again, 03, 04, and 05, will generate revenue of approximately $4.4 million, and that excludes what we have already expended as a result of last year's town meeting. That's the top half of the chart, the revenue stream. The bottom half of the chart demonstrates what articles we are proposing to fund this year. And total passage of all articles before you, articles 23 through 28, would roughly account for approximately $1.1 million of that fund, leaving a surplus, again in the bottom right-hand corner of that chart, of $3.3 million that would be available to the Community Preservation Committee to plan for future projects and for this town hall to vote based on our recommendation. The 2004 projects that are being proposed tonight are acquisition of development rights and fee title to the Cutting property, Article 25, the survey and restoration of the Revolutionary War Cemetery, Article 27, and the walkway proposal, Article 28. This article, Article 23, is largely an internal accounting exercise that we need to go through. Although the funds are generated on a local level and matched at the state level, we have to go through a series of appropriations by which we earmark that money in the categories that the Act requires us to earmark them. And so Article 23 simply takes the funds
from two fiscal years. Last year we dealt with 2004, and because of a Department of Revenue guideline issue, we couldn't deal with 2003. This year we're dealing with 2003 revenues and expected revenues from 2005, and we're appropriating them in the categories that we are required to earmark the funds for under the Community Preservation Act. This is not a spending article per se, with the exception that we are asking, based on our recommendation, to appropriate up to $45,000 in that administrative account category so that we may have access to those funds for administrative expenses. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sheila Stewart for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Thank you. Kirsten Rupinian for the Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 23? Seeing none. All those in favor of Article 23 as it appears in your... Mr. Glass, are you voting? You have to make a point of order. We're only voting on Article 23. That's all we're voting on. All those in favor of Article 23 as it appears in your warrant signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're on Article 24. Mr. Kavlak, for a motion and a brief presentation.
Mr. Moderator, I move in the words of the article in accordance with the specific amount set forth herein.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Kavlak?
This is another accounting article in the sense that this article speaks to those projects that were approved last year. We had a number of projects before town meeting, two of which have a continuing aspect to them. The first was the acquisition of the Dixon property, which was approved, and the expenditures were raised through a bond issued over a period of 5 years. At last year's town meeting, we appropriated the money for expenditure for last year's debt service. We need to do the same thing this year for this year's debt service. The amount that needs to be appropriated for the estimated debt service for the Dixon property is $86,923. The second part of this article addresses another aspect of what was approved last year, which was the Housing Authority articles. The Housing Authority articles were funded in concept because addressing the issues that had been raised previously by the Housing Authority, the Community Preservation Committee wanted to support the Housing Authority to build housing. The Town Hall voted to support it overwhelmingly, but the articles which would have transferred property to the Housing Authority last year were indefinitely postponed. That is the discussion that we just had tonight. And so the article last year, although it approved funding for the Housing Authority for construction of this housing, was contingent upon the successful passage of articles transferring sites to the Housing Authority, which occurred this year. The Housing Authority originally started with a list that exceeded the list that we heard tonight, and as a result of the contingency factor and not knowing how many of those sites would eventually be conveyed over to the Housing Authority, the wording of last year's article had a contingency factor that said that up to $320,000 would be spent for construction of up to 16 units, but in the event less than 16 units could be constructed, the money would be awarded on a pro rata basis at $20,000 per unit. Now, we have heard a successful discussion tonight where two articles have been voted to be potentially conveyed to the Housing Authority. There's still some uncertainty as to the total number of units that can be constructed on those properties. But the intent of the article that passed last year would be to fund those units at $20,000 apiece to the maximum number that could be built by the Housing Authority. This concept is built into the second part of Article 24 in the sense that some of the contingency factors have been met. It again allows for the appropriation of up to $320,000 for the construction of up to 16 units. It also does one other thing in the sense that last year's proposal
when we were thinking about 16 units and the full expenditure of $320,000, also called for the money to be raised and then spent through the issuance of a bond. Now that we are at a number of units considerably less than 16, and 2 years have passed, whereby we have amassed over $360,000 in this account, we have left open the fact that it might be fiscally prudent to just pay this allocation for the Housing Authority construction on a straight cash expenditure rather than through the generation of a bond. And that's built into this article as well.
Thank you. Sheila Stewart for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Kaminsky for the Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen unanimously support the article. Getting late.
I see no one at the mics. All those in favor of Article 24, as you see on the view graph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It passes unanimously. No, with very few exceptions. Article 25. We have Kirsten Rupenian, Chairman of the Board of Selectmen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move pursuant to the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate the sum of $5,318,500 for the 1. Taking by eminent domain and or purchase of fee title to 4.0 plus or minus acres of land and for the development of an active recreational field or fields on said land, together with an entrance drive, parking area, and related amenities, and for all expenses connected therewith, including bond and note issuance expense, and for 2, the purchase of a permanent restriction under Mass General Laws 184, Section 32, together with rights of public access for passive recreation uses on approximately 55 acres of land. Page 2, including a 1.4 plus or minus acre building envelope for 1 single-family home to be reserved by grantor on a certain parcel or parcels of land consisting of a portion of the property commonly referred to as the Cutting Farm, located off of Maynard Road, Sudbury, Mass., and more particularly shown on a plan entitled Site Plan of Land in Sudbury, Mass., prepared for John C. Cutting, dated March 1, 2004, prepared by David E. Ross Associates, Inc., for the purpose of acquisition and preservation of open space and the acquisition and creation of land for recreational use and for all expenses connected therewith, including bond and note issuance expense.
Is that received a second? Thank you. Ms. Rupenian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Again, my name is Kirsten Rupenian, and I'm the chairman of the Board of Selectmen, and I'm also a member of the Community Preservation Committee. In October 2002, the Cutting family presented to the town of Sudbury an offer to preserve their 77 plus or minus acre parcel of land located on Route 27, which is Maynard Road, at the site of the former Sudbury Nursery, which is located directly across the street from the Willis Hill subdivision.
Mr. Pennian, pardon me for interrupting. As part of your motion, do you want to read that third slide? We only got the 2. Do we have a third one there?
Yes.
Does that have the consent of the hall?
Yes.
My apologies. Yes, I'm sorry. Back up. Let me finish the second page, and I'll continue to the third.
Okay. Where did you leave off on the second?
And note issuance expense.
Right.
And page 3, I'm sorry.
Yep.
And to raise this appropriation, the treasurer, with the approval of the Board of Selectmen, is authorized to borrow $5,318,500 under General Law 44B, Section 11, and General Law 44, Section 7, 3, or any other enabling authority, and the Board of Selectmen is authorized to take any other action necessary to carry out this project. And further, to appropriate $530,000 from Community Preservation Fund revenues and reserves to pay debt service due during fiscal year 2005 on any bonds or notes issued under this vote.
Does that motion receive a second? It does.
Sorry.
Ms. Rupenian.
Thank you. I apologize. Again, the Sudbury Nursery across from the Willis subdivision. The owners wanted to preserve the open space values, the scenic values, the agricultural values of this property. They've worked with the town to bring forward a deal involving several different uses aimed at preserving the property at the lowest overall cost. This involves the purchase of development rights, which prohibits future development in perpetuity. Purchase of approximately 4 acres of the land for active recreational use, public use and access to the land for passive recreation, including trails and pond access, and limited development of the 10 single-family housing units. And finally, reservation of one additional house lot in the rear of the property for development by the Cuttings, with the town getting the right of first refusal on it if the Cuttings decide not to build there in the future. This is pictorially represented in this slide, which shows all of the various components of the offer. As you can see, the majority of the property is being preserved. The town has been interested in preserving this land for a number of years, and there are a number of reasons for their interest. First, the town will be preserving a parcel that has been identified as a secondary priority parcel in the 1997-2002 Open Space and Recreation Plan. It abuts the new Assabet River Wildlife Refuge and is a portion of a 3,000-acre wildlife corridor running north to south through the towns of Sudbury, Maynard, Marlborough, Hudson, and Stowe. The property contains a shoreline of two ponds, and it is one of the largest remaining vacant parcels of land in Sudbury. Second, the property is highly developable. A preliminary subdivision plan has been drawn demonstrating the ability to create 32 house lots on this property. The agreement with the Cutting family reduces the number of lots to be developed down to 11. By preventing the development of 21 houses, the town would be avoiding the future costs of development and the need for school and municipal services for these houses. Given the visible nature of this property along Route 27, we have superimposed houses on the property in the approximate location where they would be if the property is fully developed. The first view is looking straight into the property as it currently exists. The next slide shows the property fully developed from the same angle. Here are more shots of the potential view from a different angle, existing and with proposed development. These slides use actual photos of the property with houses superimposed on them. As you can see, the beauty of the property is obliterated by the homes. An alternative view of the development of the property is shown here, with only 10 lots being developed. 6 lots will be in the field at the left, and the other 4 lots are tucked behind the Cuttings house and will not be visible from Route 27. Any development in the building envelope in the rear would not be visible from the road as well. The third reason the town is interested in this parcel is because it preserves for agricultural purposes a family farm that has been farmed by the Cuttings since the 1600s. Under this proposal, the Cuttings would continue to own, live on, and farm portions of this land. But permanent restrictions will be placed on that portion of the land for which development rights are being purchased by the town. The town has used this concept successfully in 1981 and 1984 when it purchased the development rights with an agricultural preservation restriction on the Barton Farm on Marlborough Road, several of the Verrill Farm fields on North Road, and the Stone Tavern Farm on Horse Pond Road across the street from the police crime lab. These properties are protected by similar restrictions as would be placed on this property. Through this land preservation technique, the town will be able to prevent development in perpetuity of 21 house lots without paying the full cost of ownership of the land and simultaneously ensure that our community heritage of farming continues on this parcel. The agreement calls for the land to be open for the same types of passive recreational opportunities for Sudbury residents as other land the town has acquired by outright purchase, such as the Piper Farm and the Weiss Black property. This includes walking, cross-country skiing, and canoeing on Cutting Pond and potentially Willis Lake. The combination of active and passive recreation provides residents a unique and convenient opportunity. And lastly, the town would be gaining land for recreation playing field. 4 acres will be purchased by the town under this proposal. The selectmen support the request of $600,000 for the development of recreational field space on the portion of the property to be owned by the town. The need for athletic field space has been well documented, and this acquisition and field would help to reduce the severe overuse that our existing fields are now experiencing. We have a slide showing the potential view of the field from several perspectives along Maynard Road. The first slide you see is leaving Sudbury on Route 27. The second is entering Sudbury on Route 27. The third, you are looking straight ahead at the field. And finally, an aerial view of that field. The active recreation area will have its own access road from Route 27 with adequate parking. The Park and Recreation Committee will be discussing, Commission will be discussing this area further in their presentation on the article. The Board of Selectmen, Town Manager, Town Planner, assisted by a paid land preservation specialist from the Sudbury Valley Trustees, have been negotiating with the Cuttings for the past 16 months. Our goal has been to develop an offer that maximizes as many of the values that both parties were working to achieve. For the Cuttings, the reservation of one house lot at the westernmost edge of the property was critical, along with their retained rights to own and farm the property. Although, as I said before, the town will receive the right of first refusal on the reserve house lot if the Cutting family chooses not to develop it for their own use in the future. The Cuttings have given up some of their profit that would have been made if the property had been developed into 32 lots in order to make this deal work and preserve the property. The Board of Selectmen believes that the agreement we've reached with the Cutting family gives the town an opportunity to use the newly adopted Community Preservation Act to acquire the first major parcel on the town's preservation list offered to the town since the adoption of the Act. This is a more complicated offer than the other land deals that have been brought to town meeting in the last 6 years in terms of how preservation will be achieved and, if successful, will serve multiple purposes. By approving this proposal, the town will be preserving a parcel on its open space priority list, preventing a large residential development and its associated service costs from moving forward, providing a much-needed recreational playing field, and preserving for the enjoyment of all Sudbury residents now and in the future 60 acres of land. As with all major parcels of land held privately in town, the Cuttings had the option and the right for not working with us by simply selling or developing their land. The Board of Selectmen worked directly with the Cutting family representatives, and we appreciate the opportunity for allowing the town to work with them to bring the alternative option of preservation before town meeting. Because of these discussions, we've been able to keep the cost of this project down, protect the town's interests and those of future generations, and save CPA funds for other projects that may come online in the future. Both sides have met halfway on many of the discussion points, and we, the selectmen, feel that the offer, based on sound financial review and advice. The price is supported by two appraisals, one commissioned by the Cuttings, prepared by John Avery, and one commissioned by the town, prepared by Landvest. The final offer reflects a price below both appraisals when compared to the number of lots eliminated from the development plan. According to the American Farmland Trust, Massachusetts has lost 27,200 acres of its agricultural land to developed uses in the five-year period of 1992 to 1997. Massachusetts ranks the second highest in the nation for percentage of agricultural land converted to developed uses. In a 10-year period between 1987 and 1997, Massachusetts lost 10% of its total number of farms. The ever-shrinking number of large parcels of land available for preservation signals the necessity of creative negotiations with landowners. The large landowners of Sudbury who are willing to talk with town officials are being sent a message that we are amenable to negotiation if it is in the best interest of our community. The town has worked vigilantly to preserve those portions of the Cutting property, the views, the public access, the waterfront access, a viable site for active recreation, and continued agricultural use, while allowing partial development on other areas of the property. The partial development is critical to reducing costs and allowing the town to continue to reserve funds for other valuable town projects in the future. When all is said and done, this land offers a unique opportunity for the town to add to the open space network that I've mentioned in the beginning of my presentation. And equally important, it allows the town to develop an active and passive recreational use project that is unprecedented in the town. And finally, keep in mind that with any large land purchase, regardless of the particulars, once the land is developed, it is forever gone from us. We are proud to present this article to town meeting for your consideration, and the Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article. Thank you.
Paul Griffin, Park and Rec. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
My name is Paul Griffin. I'm the chairman of the Sudbury Park and Recreation Commission, as well as a member of the Community Preservation Committee. It is an honor to be here. There are two topics I want to address briefly that are related to the proposed athletic fields on the Cutting property. First is our need for more fields. Since the fall of 2003, we've been working with Gale Associates to develop an athletic field master plan. The objective of this plan is to assess the current condition of all fields in town, quantify the current and future needs of the town, and to propose a plan to best meet these needs in the short and long term. Gale Associates has completed a preliminary evaluation of the 41 athletic fields in town and has submitted a preliminary field assessment report. From these findings, it is apparent that many of our fields are in poor condition due to extreme overuse. In addition, the town is lacking sufficient athletic field space to accommodate the existing amount of youth and adult sports programs. Preliminary review indicates that the town of Sudbury needs approximately four additional rectangular fields, i.e. soccer or lacrosse, two to three baseball fields, and several renovated Little League baseball fields to fulfill the existing and projected needs of the town's recreational programs. On a positive note, Gale has concluded that the Cutting property is an ideal location for the development of one of these badly needed multi-purpose rectangular fields. It is open, level, and adequately sized, minimizing site development costs. We believe that the impact on environmentally sensitive areas can be avoided. Gale Associates strongly recommends that the town give consideration to this important project. Also, it has been suggested by some that Park and Recreation wait to develop fields on the newly acquired Mahoney property off of Edgell Road. Based on the initial results from the master plan, we believe that our current inventory of fields is severely inadequate and that we would need additional field space such as the Cutting property, even with the development of the Mahoney land for fields. The second topic I want to briefly discuss is the choice of synthetic versus grass for athletic field development. Park and Recreation is exploring the possible benefits of using the latest synthetic turf technology, the same that is being considered for the Lincoln Sudbury Field project. We have not reached a final conclusion, but there are some compelling advantages that need to be considered.
Mr. Griffin?
Yes.
I don't often like to interrupt. Is this going to be about the Cutting property, synthetic turf?
It's a possible proposal technology used for the development of that field.
Ought we not buy it first before we put the field down, or do you wish to... How much longer are you going to be on the synthetic fields?
About 30, 45 seconds.
Please.
I'm just going to review five quick points that many of you are aware of already. The first is durability. By far the most significant advantage to a synthetic turf field is its durability. The surface can be subjected to continuous daily use with little short-term deterioration in the surface quality. It is well documented that a single synthetic field is the equivalent of three grass fields in terms of the use they can sustain. Maintenance cost savings. Gale Associates estimates the annual cost to maintain high-quality grass fields to be in the vicinity of $19,000. It is estimated that a synthetic turf field costs approximately $750 per year to maintain. All-weather availability. If constructed properly, the synthetic field is designed to drain at a rate of 5 to 10 inches per hour, well in excess of most rainstorms. And safety. A significant number of field turf owners, which is another word for the latest technology for synthetic fields, has cited a measurable drop in knee and ankle injuries by athletes since installing the new surface. As we learn more about this exciting technology, we are encouraged that it will allow us to enhance the utility of what we already own, such as our current fields, such as Haskell Field and fields at the Curtis Middle School, so that we do not need to acquire as much land as we previously thought necessary. Park and Recreation supports Article 25. I thank you for your time, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Cadillac, CPC.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin.
I'll try to be brief. I know the hour is late, but I don't want to do disservice to the importance of this project. For purposes of the Community Preservation Act, this is our first major undertaking on behalf of the town and as a committee. We want the cutting proposal to be a model for what the town does in the future for the remaining large open space tracts in the town. This is one of about a handful of remaining properties that were identified in the open space report referred to earlier that we feel are important for the town to undertake serious consideration of. I want to refer you to a handout, hopefully most of you have it. If you don't, it's available at the back of the town hall, that addresses four issues that we feel are important for this proposal. One is the cutting fact sheet. The second is a handout on why we're proposing a bond issuance. What are the other two? One is a letter from the director of Fish and Wildlife that's running the Assabet Refuge about the environmental aspects of this project. And the fourth is a handout that describes the nature, how this development restriction works in perpetuity, what it means, and what the rights are of the town. We have, as I mentioned before, as part of our budget, $4.4 million through the end of fiscal year 05. If we wanted to spend all of that money down, if we thought that this was the last remaining valuable piece of land in the town, and we wanted to do a straight cash expenditure, we still couldn't afford it. And that's why we're recommending bonding here. The total project is $5.3 million. It reflects $4.7 for the acquisition of the development rights and fee title and $600,000 to develop that recreational field that Paul just talked about. The total price is $5.3 million. For us to act on this project and reserve money for the handful of other properties in the town that are worthy of discussion by future town meetings, we have to bond it. There's no other way that we can seriously address these large parcels in this area of the country unless we talk about the issuance of bonds. When we looked at this project from the standpoint of the Community Preservation Committee, we had to make sure that it met our guidelines. And it meets two of the areas that I mentioned in the very beginning. It meets the open space criteria, and it meets the recreation criteria. With respect to open space, the guidelines are that it permanently protects wildlife habitat, it preserves rural and agricultural character, it provides opportunities for recreation, it protects wildlife corridors, It provides connections to trails, it preserves views, it borders a scenic road, it protects drinking water quality, it provides flood storage, it preserves surface water bodies, and it serves to acquire a secondary parcel as identified on the open space plan. So we felt that it met all of those guidelines as an open space acquisition on its own. On top of that, it meets also the recreation guidelines because we're establishing this active recreation field. The field will support multiple recreation uses. It'll be available for a significant number of residents. It will expand the range of recreational opportunities in the town, particularly the passive recreational opportunities associated with canoeing and hiking, and potentially ice skating on the ponds. It maximizes the utility of land, and it promotes for the creative use of walkway corridors. So it meets two criteria under the Act. It's one of the goals that we have as a committee is to try to get multiple uses on land that we acquire with community preservation funds. Thanks very much.
Chris Morley, Planning Board.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Chris Morley, as you stated, 321 Old Lancaster Road, speaking on behalf of the Planning Board in unanimous support of the mixed use of the cutting property as proposed under Article 25. A primary goal of the town's 2001 master plan is to preserve and enhance the rural character of Sudbury by preserving large parcels of land. This goal has several objectives. preserving for natural resource and land conservation purposes, preserving scenic views in town, and preserving what is left of Sudbury's agricultural roots. But most significantly, the objective is to reduce total growth in town to lessen the many impacts of development. We are all too familiar with the impacts of growth. Loss of trees, loss of privacy, school growth, increased traffic, water shortages, and more. Article 25 decreases the overall build-out of the town by 21 additional single-family houses. Sorry, I could hear myself. That may not seem like a lot, but added to the other parcels that Sudbury has purchased in the last decade or developed into senior housing, we have eliminated over 100 new lots from being developed into single-family homes. These parcels include the Piper Farm, Meacham property, Wisebud, and Mahoney Farm, all parcels that are included in the town's 1997 open space and recreation plan. Based on build-out projections for Sudbury, those 100 lots equate to between 5 and 10% of the lots still available for building. Continued efforts in this vein will yield similar results in the next decade, helped particularly by the state match of Sudbury CPA funds. Many people ask what the specific cost-benefit calculation is to the town's purchase of developable land. In fact, it is impossible to arrive at a definitive calculation. Many benefits are intangible. Many alternative costs are not projectable. Still, it is an estimation exercise that we do go through. A simple calculation using straight per-pupil expenditures is not completely accurate, but it does give an indication of cost to the town that would be avoided by preventing the construction of 21 homes. Using fiscal year 04 budget numbers from the Sudbury Public Schools and the high school, using current enrollment numbers, the average per-pupil expenditure to educate a child in Sudbury, at least this year, is $9,200. Assuming two children per home, the educational and municipal costs of the development would exceed $440,000 a year. The houses at Cutting would most likely be assessed in the $1.3 million range, similar to houses at Ironworks Farm, a recent subdivision developed by the Cutting family on land they owned off of Tainter Drive. The tax revenue from these typical 21 homes would total approximately $370,000 per year. Using just these rough figures, each year the development would cost the town over $70,000. If the houses contained on average more than two children per household, and I personally think they would, the cost of the town would rise proportionately and significantly. The total cost of the Cutting land after the 20-year bond will be $7,400,000, with the state CPA match bringing the cost of Sudbury taxpayers down to $3,700,000. Using only that $70,000 per year savings that we just calculated, this purchase would pay for itself after the 53rd year, at which time the difference between the cost to service it in the developed state versus an open state would have been equalized. The largest piece of the cost-benefit calculation puzzle that is missing here is the potential incremental cost associated with 21 houses. This is the cost of adding new infrastructure or personnel once the town's population reaches a particular level. It could be the need to drill new water supply wells or to increase the size of public safety departments. Or it could mean the need to construct a new school. 21 kids fill a classroom. 63 kids fill three classrooms. But exactly how many children of what age would live in these 21 houses over the years and how they fit into existing classroom space in any given year is really guesswork. Whether these 21 houses or another 21 houses in the future push us into such incremental expenses, we do not know. What we do know is that the expenses attributable to these 21 houses, along, of course, with the taxes that they pay towards them, will continue to rise in perpetuity. The bond will be paid off in 20 years. Throughout all of these years, residents will have had the use and the enjoyment of the property, the playing field, the canoe landing, the trails, perhaps a boardwalk to Willis Lake, and the aesthetic benefits derived from keeping the land open. Tonight, we are exercising concern for the near term of our town while taking care for its future as well. Since 1997, we have been successful in criminally protecting and or significantly reducing development potential on one half of the original 18 parcels identified in the 1997 open space plan. The parcels the town has brought forward for preservation over the last several years, including this parcel, have all been identified in various reports by the Conservation Commission, Land Use Priorities Committee, and the CPC as preferential for preservation or some other municipal use. The planning has been done. With the CPA, we now have excellent means to implement the goals of the master plan. Land is a finite resource. We must continue to work with the large landowners in town to protect their lands from development, particularly those landowners who partner with us. The Planning Board urges your support for this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morley. Sheila Stewart, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee would like to acknowledge the hard work, time, and effort expended over the last year by the Community Preservation Committee, the Board of Selectmen, the Town Manager, the Planning Board, and the Recreation Commission to bring us this worthy proposal. The cutting article gives us a unique opportunity to preserve open space, promote active and passive recreation. The Sudbury Finance Committee supports their efforts and voted unanimously to recommend approval of these projects, of this project.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, you wish to be heard on the article.
Yes, I'm Deirdre Manoia from 388 Willis Road. I actually was involved in helping to draft this act, Community Preservation Act, and I have to say that this is exactly the dream of the people who brought this forward, including Senator Duran and now Senator Reeser. It combines all of the values. In fact, I think you're not giving yourself enough credit for the historic value of keeping in farmland land that has been farmed since the 1600s. It's a huge historic value. And the financial deal that has been worked out is also very brilliant. It's very advanced to buy development rights. Sudbury will be in the forefront of using one of the very best tools for open space preservation by doing this. I think the Cutting family has been incredibly wonderful in indulging us in the long conversation that has obviously gone on with so many of our civic leaders. I think it's a fabulous, wonderful project, and I hope everyone will support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Susan Crane, 34 Robert Best Road. First, I share the enthusiasm of all the previous speakers. I think this is a really, really exciting opportunity for the town, and want to commend everybody who put so much time and thought into putting this together. I also wanted to comment on Kristen Rupenian's slides. They were terrific, so we could see that the views are going to be preserved, not only from the view from Maynard Road, which I think is so important as one enters Sudbury from Maynard, but also the views inside the property of the two ponds. Chris Morley's financial information was also very compelling about the cost to the town of building additional houses and what it means to the town financially to prevent 21 more houses from being built. And I think we heard earlier about the concerns about Nixon School's overcrowding, and this, I understand, is within the Nixon School District. And what I really want to talk about are the conservation values of this property. We haven't heard an awful lot about that, but I thought they were best summarized in one paragraph written by Libby Herland, the refuge manager of the Aspet National Wildlife Refuge. And I would just like to read that to everyone, because I think it pertains not only to the refuge, but to the conservation values of this property by keeping 55 acres open and conserved forever. Lands which remain either fallow, these are Libby Herland's words from her letter, and there's a copy, I understand, for all of us back here, but since I didn't have one when I walked in, I assume some of you hadn't had a chance to read it either. So I'm just going to quote from her letter, the one paragraph. Lands which remain either fallow or in agricultural use will provide higher quality habitat to migratory birds and other wildlife than manicured lands. Lands in agricultural use can contribute to the overall health of wildlife on adjacent lands. The 55 acres under conservation restriction will serve as additional habitat for some of the species using the refuge. Additionally, these lands extend the habitat benefits provided by nearby protected lands, including the refuge and the Sudbury State Forest. Large areas of conservation land provide habitat to species that have more specific habitat requirements, such as larger territories. If we want to keep common birds common and keep more species of wildlife from becoming endangered, then we need to maintain the largest areas of contiguous wildlands possible and reduce habitat fragmentation. Libby concludes by wholeheartedly supporting this project, as do I, and I hope all of you will join me. Thanks.
Mr. Mike Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Mike Weitzel, 34 Barton Drive. I have a question on public access, and it's probably for the selectmen. The agreement provides rights for public access according to the last three lines on the screen. If it wouldn't be too much trouble, could we have the aerial photo slide up on the screen? There could be, I assume that the agricultural uses, that the agricultural uses will be on the 55 acres and the passive recreation will also be on the same area.
Yes.
The answer is yes, according to Selectman.
Right. There's mention in the warrant of potentially having access to Willis Pond. I am asking whether the agreement does provide access to Willis Pond, Cutting Pond, and to the Aspen River Wildlife Refuge, and who is responsible for the trails and the trail maintenance. I'm wondering how what the agreement says about using the area for agriculture and for public access. I would imagine that there will be some limitations on the public access through the agricultural areas.
Mr. Kablak, did you want to answer the question?
I think I have a good handle on most of the questions. This view graph that's on the on the screen right now is representative of where the trails will be. The trails that are shown in the light green, which emanate from the 4-acre parcel that's being acquired, which is where the active recreation and parking facility will be, are the areas where there will be trail access, public access during daylight hours that will take you to the edge of Cutting Pond, as well as potentially to the edge of Willis Pond. The reason why we say potentially to the end of Willis Pond is that although the trails are located on current trails and cart paths that are already developed on the property and have been used over the years, if not centuries, as farm roads, and are actually more or less gravel roads, when the trail courses through the section of the wooded portion of the property, the Willis Pond, it does go through wetland areas. I was out there in February in the wintertime when we still had very cold temperatures and the ground was frozen, and we were able to walk out unobstructed to the edge of Willis Pond. When we were out on one of the sidewalks that we held in early March, it was wet, and we were only able to get out to within about 50 feet of Willis Pond. And then when we met at our second sidewalk, we were only able to get out to within about 100 feet of Willis Pond. Chris Morley mentioned that one of the ideas is to build a wooden walkway through that area of seasonal wetness, so that pedestrians can get out to Willis Pond for purposes of using the pond for wildlife viewing or other purposes. So there will be public access. It's shown in the area of light green. Now, the other thing that you mentioned is whether there will be access to the wildlife refuge. We have shown a potential trail link that is in purple
that will bring you to the edge of the property where the property adjoins the wildlife refuge. We have shown it in purple because the wildlife refuge is currently conducting its own land use plan of how they want public access to the refuge. We will not be able to have an official access point to the wildlife refuge at that point until that land use plan is complete and the wildlife refuge agrees that that will be a legitimate source of public access to their property. So that's why that portion of the trail is shown in purple. The maintenance responsibilities for the trail would fall to the town. But again, these areas have been mapped out in areas where there are currently existing cart paths and there is clearing. The only affirmative thing that the town would need to do in the future is that wooden walkway that I mentioned with respect to access to Willis Pond.
Mr. Moderator, I believe that answers the question. I was concerned about the legal access, and apparently, according to what Mark just said, that we do have legal access to Willis Pond.
Thank you. Mr. Ensign.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Ensign, 44 Bent Road. I'm the chairman of the Conservation Commission, and I have some great news tonight. We, everyone on the commission voted to support this article as open space. And the reason that's great news is because we did struggle with it, and happy to say that we worked very collaboratively with both the selectmen and the planning board and others. We struggled with it as an open space issue for several reasons. Obviously, there's going to be a restriction on the property. In the current form, it's an agricultural restriction, and it does permit such things as outbuildings. And, you know, we're trusting that things will be put into place, that the approval process will be straightforward, and that not too many greenhouses will show up on the property. Did want to correct one thing. There is approximately 21 units that potentially could go out there. There were some wetland issues with probably about 8 of them, so there may be a little bit of math in there that might be corrected. But again, this is a good open space purchase because agricultural is a priority of the Conservation Commission. Reducing density overall is good. Water quality with fewer septic systems is also good. And again, we trust that things will be worked out, and again, the Conservation Commission does unanimously support this.
Question has been moved. Is there a second? There is. All those in
favor. Point of order.
Excuse me?
Point of order.
Yeah, what is your point of order, Mr. Tober?
That you have not heard anybody who might have, you know.
I haven't heard anyone that what?
Opposition.
Mr. Tober?
You have not heard anybody who might have anything critical to say. Just a big parade of all proponents.
Thank you.
And they have been playing with the time.
Mr. Tober, that's not a point of order.
Oh,
I'm afraid you can't. If you agree with Mr. Tober, vote against the call of the question if you wish to hear more information. The question has been called. It has been seconded. I'm asking all those in favor of the call of the question to raise their cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on to the main motion. You see the main motion in front of you. Does anyone have to see the other two slides along with this one? Then we'll vote on the main motion. All those in favor, and this is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of Article 25, as shown on the view graph, please raise your cards. All those opposed, it passes way more than two-thirds. What? Hang on. Do I have a motion to adjourn to tomorrow at 7:30? Is there a second? All in favor? All opposed? Thank you. Pass.
Work with them, they can do it.